This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
You're listening to listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org. Time now for After Hours.
By her heart. It's like acting in a movie. good old guy. Why don't you come to your senses? You've been acting pretentious for so long now. I know you're hiding behind that cloud of cologne, and all the guys you give your heart to only hurt you somehow. You don't need that. If you're into that, that queen is your best bet. Now it seems like some dick dancer has been dancing on your table, but you only want the ones that you can't get. Desperate old guy, oh, you ain't getting no younger.
The program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
You have tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music dear to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours.
Hello, Houston. Houston, Galveston, and the world. This is the October 6th edition of After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude. What are you waving your hands at me for? If you're gonna wave your hands to remind me of the date, give me a number with your fingers.
I'm taking it.
Yeah, Rose, you're number one, too.
And who are you?
Okay, I want to repeat the joke I made there. Since he shaved, I guess it's your month for the facial hair?
Oh.
Huh?
Leave my mustache out of
there. Ooh. Rose will be with us in a moment.
That's what she thinks.
Oh, yeah, you're doing the engineering. Okay, and who are you?
Who else would? My name is Chris Harrison. I'll be your co-executive producer for this evening.
And I'm Jimmy Carper. I'm the other one who still knows how to do engineering when necessary.
Just wait when we get the new board. You're screwed.
We're getting a new board?
Screwed?
Yeah. If you check your emails, something comes over emails occasionally besides porn.
Really?
Yeah, I know. It's a shocker.
Mm.
The hell I say.
Yes.
Well,
a lot of things come up. Something came over the email that I'm going to talk about in just a second, but it's after we talk about the music that we played. I've been listening to a wonderful music station here lately that's just right down the dial from us at 89.7. It's KACC out of Alvin, and they play some fantastic music. And twice in the last week, I've heard the first song that we played tonight, old song by Elton John, called...
How the hell should I know? It was on vinyl.
All the Girls Love Alice.
I'm just surprised. I mean, if you actually played an Elton John song.
Well, because it's queer. It's a queer song.
You don't play Elton, Melissa, Katie.
I play Melissa. I haven't played KD in a long time, but she hasn't put out either.
Is that what
lately?
You put your right hand?
Mm. So, that, and then we followed it up with Big Mama Cotton, also known as Marcy Ray.
Sweet Mama Cotton.
Sweet Mama Cotton. What did I say?
Big Mama Cotton.
Oops. Yeah, the last time I did that, she called. She was coming back from Galveston and was listening to us and called. Sorry, Mama. Marcy Ray with a live version of Desperate Old Guy, sung to the tune of Desperado. And speaking of Marcy Ray, I have her schedule because she is the queen of Kroger. Yes, yes, Marcy Ray plays Kroger. But hell, why not? It's a gig and it pays money. And Friday, October the 12th, from 5 to 7, she's going to be at the Kroger at Buffalo Speedway at West Park. And October 13th, she's going to be at the, from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., she'll be at the Kroger at Gosling at Research Forest in the Woodlands. And some fool is calling me at this hour. Can you believe it?
Well, I answered the phone already.
No. And then
at least turn the damn thing off.
Friday, October the 19th, from 5 to 7, she's going to be at the Kroger in River Oaks. And we'll be talking about some of her other dates as they come
out.
And
her new album, Paper or Plastic.
Yes, there you go. And
with her hit single, Would You Like to Donate a Dollar to the MDA Foundation?
Oh, that, now you know.
Are you a
around.
Member? Do you have your Kroger card? Oh.
Then, let's see, this Tuesday.
There you go, yeah, 20 items or less.
October 9th is the GLBT night at Hollywood. And this is an informal dinner hosted by the Community Center at Hollywood Vietnamese and Chinese at 2409 Montrose Boulevard. Dinner begins at 6:30. And at this month's dinner, for GLBT History Month, we salute our friends with the Gulf Coast Archive and Museum of GLBT History, as well as the Charles Botts Archive, which is housed at Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church. So, contrary to public belief, yes, we do work together very well. as a matter of fact. And they're doing this because this is Gay History Month. And that you don't have to RSVP if you plan to attend, but it's always nice to have a heads up to make sure that they can reserve enough space. And you can contact Tim, Tim Brookover at gmail.com.
And tell him that the 20th anniversary show Queer Voices sent you.
Yes, yes. There was a retraction in the latest Outsmart. I
hadn't
noticed.
Seen it yet.
Yeah, it's out.
With the needle in him.
And
Tim's a sweetheart, but you know, when you get something like that, you know.
Yes. Yeah, I know. I know. P-Flags having their meeting today, October the 7th, Sunday. And Mike McGurr will speak on the coming out process. That they meet at 2 p.m. at St. Paul's United Methodist Church, 5501 South Main in the Jones Building. You've got a couple of things?
Yeah. From the Empire of the Royal Sovereign Imperial Court of the Single Star, Inc.
Mm-hmm.
Imperial Prince Double X Triple I, Chris Volk, presents Giving You the Best That I've Got, the signature performances of your favorite entertainers. It's a benefit for Legacy Community Health Services through Coronation 24. That'll be on Sunday. October 7th, starting at 8 p.m. at the BRB, 2500 Brazos. Next weekend, the Imperial Prince Royale 23 Falcon is doing Sick and Twisted. Falcon, Sick, Twisted, need I say more?
Yeah.
October 12th at 9 p.m. at George Bar, 617 Fairview. It's a direct benefit for the Colt 45's working account through Rain 23. Both of these events are sponsored by The Undercurrent from Galveston. And you can make your donations on plastic.
As well as Chris Volk presents, I think it says Noble. I'm not sure.
Double Nickel.
Oh, Double Nickel. That's what it is. Okay. The all-female show and silent auction, October the 13th, 10 p.m. at Chances Bar, 1100 Westheimer.
And I can see him eating no ball when it's up.
Yeah, I know. A benefit show for Legacy Community Health Services through Coronation 24. And the second annual Knights of the Round Table, Negative But Living with HIV AIDS, is October the 14th at the BRB. And MCs for the night are So Fonda St. John and Christopher Garrett. And a night of great performances, silent auction, and to hear stories from people who are negative would deal with HIV AIDS on a daily basis. Now, as we all know, October 11th is a queer national holiday. It's National Coming Out Day. Has been so for, God, almost 20 years, I think.
My birthday. My queer birthday.
Yes. That's right. You came out on National Coming Out.
Yes, that's when I crushed my parents' hopes and dreams. Well, not all of them. My dad still thought I was going to be a priest. Well, it wasn't a deterrent.
Still could be, yeah. National Coming Out Day. This week, join members of the Community Center in supporting two local events observing National Coming Out Day. The Seven Straight Nights for Equal Rights. It's a national week-long effort organized by the Austin-based Soul Force and Atticus Circle. Events in Houston include a 6 p.m. vigil held at Montrose Counseling Center at 401 Bernard. And read more about this event in Outfront in the October Outsmart magazine. Or go to dubcubed.outsmartmagazine.com. Out Houston, a new advocacy group and website created by activist Dot Nelson Turnier hosts Coming Out Houston, a conference on October the 13th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Montrose Counseling Center. Phyllis Randolph Fry will deliver the keynote address, The Employment Non-Discrimination Act, Transgender Issues, and the 18-Year Struggle for Inclusivity. Other well-known community figures, including Ray Hill, Lily Roddy, Josephine Titsworth, Rob Scamardo, sorry. And Tony Carroll will speak or lead workshops. Well, that's kind of cool. And our friends at the ICOH, Space City Empire, have, as always, breakfast at Mary's starting at 10 o'clock. So if you need that Bloody Mary and it's not quite noon, that's the place to go. Have breakfast and your favorite libation. Then, next Friday is Mission Accomplished at EJ's at 8:30 p.m. And the 14th is the Awards Banquet at 14:15. And we'll be hearing more about that later. Can you handle it? The third annual Tiaras of Terror show and the second annual Tiara Queen contest makes its way back to the Brazos River Bottom on Friday, October the 26th, 2007. The Tiara Queen contest is open to all community members and community entertainers. For contest information and registration, please contact Tommy Allen at 713-520-8582 or by email to tommyd1949@sbcglobal.net, benefiting the Cult 45 AIDS Trouble Fund. And speaking of...
Nice segue.
Here we go.
In Jesus' name,
again.
Amen.
I'm sorry.
I had my head down on the table praying.
Yes. Praying for something.
Praying for the same thing I pray for every day, Pinky.
So we've got folks here tonight. We've got Stephen Bunch, Vice President of the Cult 45.
Hello.
Hello. We have got Empress Elect of ICOH, Will Smith.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
So you're here with your Cult 45 hat on?
Yes, I sure am, Jimmy.
Cult 45 hat and Empress Elect.
Okay.
Just
okay.
Kinda, just
and who did you bring with you?
Oh.
Oh, hey, and how is everybody? Good, good. I was like, what?
Mr. Jim Crawford. Mr. Jim Crawford, who recently has been hanging around here.
Yes.
Off and on. Mm-hmm. And did a wonderful benefit for After Hours.
Yes.
A little while back. Mm-hmm. And you did a fantastic one tonight.
Yes, yes.
A brand new pageant,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of fun, tongue-in-cheek, but the whole idea was to make money.
Exactly.
So how did we do on that?
Well, the beneficiary was the Cult 45's ATF, mm-hmm. AIDS Trouble Fund.
Yeah.
And we raised $1,709.
Mm.
Yes. So,
congratulations.
Thank you, but it's all the people that came out and helped. I mean, it's that's who should get the credit.
What a nice shot
yes.
in the arm. But if it wasn't for you, that $1,700 well, and change wouldn't be around.
And people you. That donated before the show, too.
Exactly, yeah. exactly. Very true.
Mm-hmm. But who won?
Well, the winner is a new person on the GLBT scene mm-hmm. by the name of Carmella Chocolat. And you have to meet her. She is one to behold.
Yes, she is unbelievable.
Two titles in one house. Oh,
there
my.
There you go. Wow. It's talking about the Tiaras of Terror.
Yes.
Speaking of flashes.
Guess who the first one is?
Who is the first one?
Me.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
And I was Tiara Queen.
We were talking of Tiara Terror tonight because, Jimmy, it was pointed out by Mr. Tommy Allen that I believe, you know, the Colts have different people that do different fundraisers and people mm-hmm. will volunteer. And I believe the last time he did a show of this magnitude was his Playboy Bunny Reject show. And I believe Mr. Chris Arison volunteered to be the KPFT
that.
Representative. So
really?
That means there needs to be a different KPFT representative for his Tiara Queen company. contest.
Hey, Jimmy?
And we have a poll out on the internet.
Because I sure as hell wasn't going to do it again.
On Louis Weekend, we put a poll out on Louis Weekend. Who would you rather see for represent KPFT in Tierra of Terror? And I can tell you, the numbers are merely staggering.
You lie with fork and tongue.
Oh, no. I wouldn't lie about something that serious, Jimmy. If I could lie that good, I'd be on the nightly news.
You're the president.
Oh, I didn't say. Man, I'm just the vice president.
Yes. Yes, you are.
So the people are demanding a representative. Not demanding. Demanding is probably the wrong word.
Thank you.
More of, I don't know, they're just, other than annoying sometimes, they're asking for a representative from KPFT, and they're asking for, the cute one. But we'll take Jimmy. That's what you want as well.
I take it you've seen me in drag, so
you know. Actually, I have.
I've been to the land site. Never mind.
I'll be wearing more than that.
Drag hell! I've been to the land site to see the emperor's new clothes.
And I've seen mini me.
Yes, you have, as a matter of fact, but if I enter the contest, I will not be in that attire.
Well, you know, it seems as though last year's contestant was not in drag, so you do not have to be in drag to be a queen. We all know that in this neighborhood.
Rose is biting her tongue. It's just bleeding all over the desk.
You sure it's coming from her tongue? Took you a second there, Jimmy.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, it's a gay man thing.
If you only knew.
Yeah.
You're just thinking about that pink sash.
Yeah, we don't have to see that river that often.
I've been told that there will be a pink sash.
Well, there, possibly.
In this contest.
We could wash it with one of the new red t-shirts, and if that's what you'd like. We're eager to please.
I will certainly consider the invitation.
Well, you know, it's not my contest, so I have nothing vested in this other than
if
you'd like to hear Jimmy in the contest, see Jimmy in the contest, dial your telephones now, 713.
Just send out the email with his name on it. He'll feel dedicated. He'll feel required to do it.
Guilt him into doing it.
Whoa.
He's got a Jewish husband. He's immune to guilt.
That's right. I'm Catholic. He's Jewish. You know, the guilt flies all over and never sticks anywhere.
Oh, it's the old shame guilt thing.
Doesn't work with either one of
you
us.
You play shame, I play guilt. That's the way it goes.
That's the way it goes. So, what else is going on with the cult?
If I may say something real quick to remind people that we're always happy to be here at KPFT Radio. Listen to 90.1, 89.5 Galveston. And, you know, we always love being here because you're always so gracious and nice. But also that coming up in November, we have our fabulous fall roundup, formerly known as, you know, a fall harvest, but our fall roundup, where we'll have some munchies and we have some little gift baskets and things set up, which we'll have more details on that. Because now with the whole smoking set up in Houston, we've had to change some of our
plans.
But we also at our November fall roundup, which is November 8th. I didn't say that. Did I say that? You know, I get that wrong every year.
November 18th?
No, it's not November 18th. It's actually November 11th.
Oh, so okay.
11th. 1-1 for those of you keeping score at home.
1-1.
And there we also announce our annual award nominees, such as the B.J. Summers Memorial Entertainer of the Year.
Yes.
Who is sitting to my left
Ta-da!
As well.
And a mask.
He wears many hats, many crowns, many sashes.
He does indeed.
If you pay him enough, he'll wear just about anything. Mm-hmm. On webcam, you know.
Oh. It's all about the money.
It's all about the sash.
Yes.
Don't let him fool you, folks. It's all about
money.
The sash.
Raising that money for charity. That's what he's about.
It's the feel of that stitched embroidery against your bare flesh. I think that's what it is. But we have our BJ Summers Memorial Entertainer of the Year, our Danny Villa Award, which goes to an organization, individual, or a club of something of that ilk for helping throughout the community. These some of these awards we give out are not necessarily people that actually help the Colt 45s. Mm-hmm. B.J. Summers Memorial Entertainer of the Year, named after B.J. Summers, for yes. those of you know him, those who love him, and is an award that we give out, and it's not necessarily an award for people that have done things for the Colt 45s. It's for an outstanding entertainer in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have our Golden Colt Award, which is for a group organization individual as well that helps out the Colt 45s, and I believe last year Jimmy Carper was the recipient of one of those awards.
Danny Villa.
And also yes. Southern Country Houston was the other recipient.
Yes.
So, you know, we've got two out of three. It's almost like two out of three branches of government working for you. That's pretty
good. Wow.
You can't beat that with a stick.
Can't beat that with a stick.
But we're looking forward to having some fun, and that leads into our December Madness,
mm-hmm.
Which will break out the wreaths and hand those out in November.
Yes.
So
I'm sure there will be a pink one.
So I'm sure there will. We would never set you up and put a pink angel wreath out there on that.
Oh my God, pink angel wreath.
A pink angel wreath. Oh my gosh, whose idea was that?
Wow.
And Stanley says, bid on it.
Yeah, right. He sure does. Believe that.
It's nice for our friends of the Colt 45, such as Mr. Jim Crawford. It was a fabulous show tonight.
It really
and I can't
was.
Say enough
it
for,
really was fun.
Carmella,
mm-hmm.
as well as Maxine,
mm-hmm.
and Pocahontas.
And Pocahontas.
The other contestants, as well as everybody that came out and either gave money beforehand, because the contestants, the theme for this particular show tonight was raising money. They mm-hmm. had two numbers that they did, and they raised money during those two numbers, but they also had the option to bring money in with them beforehand,
yes.
and some of them really brought in some money.
This was like Miss Manjula. This was mm-hmm. this was a crown you bought.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and you know, we're not against that.
Whoever raises the most money, and that's what it's about.
And we cannot thank them as well as
yes.
Jim Crawford and Mr. Christopher Prado, who did the sash.
Boy, that thing was gay.
Yeah.
And
and I said, that's the gayest sash I've seen in a long time.
Yes.
And he said,
I love it.
I did it.
Yeah. And he was running around all during the show, just keeping everything going in the order.
Oh,
and
we had a lot of people
whipping those girls into shape.
Mr. Copper, there were a lot of people that pitched in. That was really
yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
It was a really nice thing to
yeah.
see some of the people that. Mm-hmm. And there's Chanel, and I think I have that same dress that Chanel had on tonight. That's mm-hmm. what I'm saying. I think I have two of those, in fact. That'll make her roll around.
That Mexican one?
Yes. Yeah, I think they sell that same dress down at the flea market.
Whoa.
You get it for about $20.
God.
Did I say something wrong?
There's you need to have someone else start your car tonight. That's all I got to say.
Well, Rose, speaking of ICOA...
I think I've said enough.
You will be stepping up here shortly.
Possibly.
14 days.
Around October 20th, I believe, is the date. At the,
Yeah,
Crown Plaza.
The Crown Plaza?
Crown something hotel.
Sorry. This segment brought to you by Amtrak. Any reason to be derailed? We can do it.
We are. I was going to ask you to talk about the stuff leading up to that, but I...
I see what you started.
But I'm sure you're excited about the
whole thing. Oh, I'm thrilled,
yes.
Thank you to the community for electing Jeff Wallace and myself to lead ICOH
That's right.
next year.
It is a community. Community.
Oh, look, the phones are flashing.
Yeah. Don't answer it. Where
do
we go? Yeah, where do we go to music? Oh, I think he's going to do it anyway. Well.
But anyway, yes. October 20th, 2 weeks from yesterday, I guess.
Yes.
We'll be taking over the Crown Plaza downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be having our fifth annual enthronement.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll be. Let's see. We'll be thanking Orlin and Ginger. You've had them on the show.
Oh yes.
Several times over the past
mm-hmm.
year. They've
worked really, really hard for the last year, and we'll be honoring them. And
you'll
that's,
be
that's the first section of the show. The theme for the evening is prom night on Uranus, from the hop to the hustle.
Yeah.
I'm not touching that.
I've been touched by too many people already.
I'm just glad I'm not on the decorating committee.
Oh, my God, yes.
But we are selling tickets. It's open to the public.
Oh, yes.
For a price, of course.
Mm-hmm.
$100 online will get you entrance to the ball.
Mm-hmm.
A complete sit-down dinner.
Oh, and it's good dinner. This is not rubber chicken stuff. Yeah, this is good. This is a good dinner.
With waiters and everything. And,
oh,
and,
yeah.
And you don't have to unwrap it.
And the forks are already there on the table.
Yeah.
It's not a spork.
No, no spork.
I was ready for a spork.
No.
You can bring your own.
Plus, 5 hours of open bar.
Open bar with call liquors.
Yes, that's right.
And then,
of course, there's always hospitality afterwards.
And the dessert bar.
Anyway.
And then there's 5 hours of open bar entertainment and a dessert bar at the end of the evening.
Wow.
And then if you're not passed out drunk by the end of the show, you can go upstairs to the hospitality
room.
That's
right.
And drink with us until they close us down.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like 4 a.m. last year.
Mm-hmm.
I was there. The only one left standing. Imagine that. Anyway, where can we get those tickets? Lovely somewhere?
You can go to www.boxofficetickets.com.
Ah.
Keyword ICOH.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd like to join us for the whole weekend, Friday night, we're having a bus tour.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to start at Tony's with one of our shows. I forget the name of it. I don't have my notes.
I know. You didn't expect to be doing this. I know.
I just kind of happened in. But Friday night we'll be having our bus tour. And cost of just the bus tour is
$10. Mm-hmm.
Enthronement.
Plus you get a free drink at every bar.
Oh, yeah. You get a coupon for a free drink. Every stop that we make, you get a free drink. And then enthronement on Saturday. Sunday at Riva's, we'll be having our victory brunch.
Mm-hmm.
And the cost of that would be $25.
Yeah.
But if you go online and buy the tickets by the 13th, I believe, it will cost you $125 for the whole weekend.
For the whole weekend.
So you get, it's a savings of about $10.
Yeah, it's like you get the bus thing for free.
Yeah, and all the cocktails that go along with that.
Yeah, great. Okay, we'll be talking about that more next week. And I know we've got Hatch waiting in the wings, and I don't like to make those folks too late because some of them have curfews.
Well, thank you, Jimmy.
We are very welcome, and we're happy to see you every month on the first Saturday.
Possibly.
You or someone else? You or someone else?
So flaxseed oil is working. So that's all I can say, so I'll try to remember.
Jim Crawford, thank you for being here, and congratulations on a wonderful show.
Thank you, and thank you for the Colts.
Hope it becomes an annual thing.
We're going to try our best.
Mr. Prado, thank you for being here in the background, at least. We'll get you on the air one day.
I've had my time.
and you'll have it again.
So are you trying to say you're past your prime?
Oh, no.
And I would like to say, for all the listeners out there, when you call in with your donation to KPFT in After Hours, don't forget to put in that memo section of that check, Jimmy for TR Queen, please.
good one.
That was really good.
Rose, thank you for being here.
Oh,
and
thank you for having me. And thank you to Stephen and the Colts for letting me barge in on your time.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
Mr. Chris, do we have some music queued up? He's shaking his head yes.
He looks like he's gritting his teeth over there.
Yeah, I know. He's probably pissed at me. Hey, gather, gather around.
Yeah. extreme ease when I was trying not to fail. You were at the dance, I was home watching Barbara Mendel. The yearbook called you the most likely to succeed. While I was sick that day, my photo's nowhere to be seen. I am the freak, I am the fag, I am the widow one you couldn't stand. I am the geek, I am the nerd, you beat me up when I was 10. So what? I play with dolls, I play with dolls. Guess who? You don't remember me. Hey, guess who? You're singing to my song right now. You see that you all have to think for this bird. That's true, what they say. The meek shall inherit the earth. I am the freak, I am the fag. I am the widow one you couldn't stand. I am the geek, I am the nerd. You beat me up when I was 10.
Played Kevin in a while.
Kevin Cahoon.
So I figured I needed to play him.
Yes,
I can get more into the music. And
I like that, and it really fits in the Hatch segment.
Yeah, I mean, it gets from a lot more watching all this, with new cable and getting to watch so much logo.
Yeah.
Today I was switched over to a different station. Part of the reason why I'm a little out of it today.
Yeah.
I spent 11 hours today on Fox Reality Station.
On purpose?
Yes.
What was it?
I got hooked on a show called Solitaire.
Yeah.
Solitaire 2.0. Now, first of all, for the gay men to watch it, there's a couple of times where the guys are at least half naked. Watch episode one of it.
Ooh.
They had to blur the one guy who was sitting in his underwear. They had to do a little blur job when he was sitting in the box.
Oh, because his box
the submariner.
His
box was a little.
And I got hooked on it.
Uh-huh.
And watched the entire season.
My goodness.
Today, from the preliminary, here's what we're going to be showing this season, all the way through to not just the final, but then I watched the reunion show.
Oh my God. You are hooked.
It's a weird show. But there's going to be weirder on that show, on that station coming later.
Oh.
Yes, I'm going to be finding out more about it.
Okay.
But let's turn it over to the hatchlings. As long as, I don't mind the squeaky thing there, but the wrapper from the candy bar. Was that subtle?
Why we've chosen to eat a candy bar while we're on the air, I will never understand.
Well, I love Twix.
The no food and drink sign should have been your first clue that perhaps.
There's a no food and drink sign?
Honey, you're in a radio station.
Yeah, we don't do shit.
Yeah, just don't smack into the microphone. But like I said, your rapper was the annoying part.
And I'm sorry about the squeaking. I put the microphone out of the deal and I couldn't.
We're used to that kind of noise.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Well, heck, that used to be the opening theme to our show. It had a squeaking. But
yes.
I'm not going to that with the hatchlings.
Bed springs.
It's all yours.
All right. Well, good stuff. Welcome to the Hatch radio segment of the show. Let's start off with names and let's start with you.
Hi, I'm Aja.
I'm Christopher.
I'm Seth.
I'm Brendan, one of the adult facilitators for Hatch.
And this is Hatch. So we'll start off with Hatch info. The website hatchyouth.org. The number for Hatch is 713-529-3590. And I'd like to start off with some information about Hatch. There's an awards banquet coming up. Then we also have 365 plays. Go see it. It's awesome. And, you know, we need to get some more kids in Hatch, you know? Hatch is very cool. It's very safe. And it's just this warm, nice atmosphere. You don't have to tell people if you're gay, if you're bi, whatever. Just come, be cool, make friends, hang, talk, play games, whatever, learn info. Just be cool, be yourself. It's a nice, friendly atmosphere. We will be talking about GLBT in the media. We'll talk on coming out day and that horrible, sad little STD called syphilis.
I'd hardly call it little. To touch back on Hatch, Hatch is a great organization for kids. Hatch can be anything from a cool place to meet people, and you can really develop a social network within your gay community for young adults, and it also can be a lifeline for people. And when you come to Hatch, if you go to Hatch for a good amount of time and you want to continue going to Hatch, and if you want to volunteer, you can join what we call the YSC, which is the Youth Steering Committee. The two out of three people we have here today, we are steering committee members. Seth is a former co-president, and myself, I am a current co-president.
And they're so awesome.
Thank you.
So we'd like to talk about GLBT in the media.
Well, let's talk about how old does someone have to be to qualify for Hatch?
Okay.
13. Ages are 13 to 20.
Mm-hmm. When you turn 21, you age out. We, within this past few months, I think I've seen the largest amount of young youth. Of like, I've seen 13-year-old, you know, gay young men. I've seen 14-year-old lesbians, and that's outstanding to me to see such young people going. People with a, you know, who are very young but have a great sense of who they are at such young age.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's been a definite trend. When I first started with Hatch volunteering about 7 years ago, it was definitely the older group that would come to Hatch and were regulars for Hatch. So over the years, that's something that I've noticed.
Absolutely. I started coming when I was 15, and so I think definitely meeting people and the information Hatch is giving me has shaped me into the healthy, stable lesbian that I am today. So, and absolutely, and you know, after you age out, turn 25, you can come back as a volunteer and help the next generation, lead them, guide them into future
rainbowdom.
For sure. I love that you mentioned the word stable, because that's what Hatch is to someone like me, is a stable thing. To me, in my mind, Hatch is never going to go away. And that's what it is for a lot of kids. And when there are new hatchlings, I like to tell people the coolest thing about Hatch is we're going to love you no matter what. No matter who you are walking through the doors of Hatch, you could be someone in a tutu, or you could be someone who's very, very masculine. It doesn't matter what you are, it doesn't matter how you identify, we accept you and love you no matter what.
And you can change every week, and that's okay.
Absolutely. I have changed, I think in the big picture, I think I've made three monumental changes at Hatch, because when I first walked in, everyone saw me a lot different than from who I am today. And Hatch has given us the great opportunity to do Hatch Radio, where we'll have, I think, the most that I've seen in our here in the station of Hatch. I think we've seen like 7-8 people all in the same place. And so everyone gets to speak and talk about issues that they're concerned about. And the issues that we've picked out today are fantastic. And Aja, I'd like you to start off and talk to us a little bit about how GLBT people are portrayed in the media.
Well, for the longest time, I guess you could say for the past, this decade, movies about gay people were always so dark and depressing. It was always some psycho killer who was gay because his father raped him or something like that. Or it was some lesbian who'd been so abused by men. Or if it was a bisexual, they were just some psycho dominatrix or just big whore. And questioning, if it was someone who was questioning, it's, oh, there's this poor, confused, person who is so weak and helpless and doesn't know. And usually, they either go back to living a heterosexual lifestyle.
That's the happy ending.
That's the happy ending.
They realize they're straight.
Absolutely, and that just sickens me. Recently, we have amazing movies. Amazing, amazing movies of true stories of transgendered people, of lesbians, and more honest portrayals. It's not as good as I would like it to be, but it is becoming more honest. And in TV, oh my goodness. Before, it was always some token little feminine gay guy for, you know, comedic purposes only, and never just a serious gay character who actually had more depth, who, you know, was more than just, oh, no, no, or some lesbian who was
a farmer
or an engineer who was
or a welder,
yes, who was just so hard and cold and unfeeling. And if it's bisexual, they're hard. But not lately, I guess you could say that there's more out there, but there's still sort of the stereotypes out there. And like I say, the big one, the L word, everyone knows about that show. It does open up a lot of, you know, visions of different types of lesbians and relationships, but that's not exactly all, you know, the gay community is about. And with, you know, was it Queer as Folk and all that and all that and all that. So we are more out there, but I don't think that all portrayals are very positive.
Well, for sure, we've definitely come a long way, and the portrayal of who we are as a community and who we are as individual sections of that community, gay, bisexual, lesbian, or transgendered, has definitely evolved. Because in the beginning, it was a very negative portrayal, because I think a lot of the people who couldn't identify with the GLBT community didn't know anything about GLBT people, so it was so unknown that crazy stories like, you know, very butch women who were, you know, crazy individuals, and then gay men who were serial killers and all of this, because we couldn't understand it.
And like early movies, 40s and 50s, you know, gay people were, and gays, lesbians, bis, transgenders, and the intersex, they were almost always the villain.
Oh,
or
God.
Like the first to be killed,
or deeply disturbed,
very sad people.
Very, right. Very sad.
Right. Yeah, and some of the first movies about gay people were about, you know, why they were gay, and mm-hmm. would be like, oh, well, I had a father who abused me, and that's why I became a gay man, or I had a father who condemned me for my gender, and that's why I became transgendered. Because I think people who didn't have any relation to the GLBT community wanted to find an explanation. Not that I think every single person who had no connection with us wanted to pinpoint that we were terrible people, but I think they were looking for an explanation of why we were the way we were.
Oh, yeah, and some of those movies helped to shape the way society looks at it today.
At first, homosexuality was classified as a disease. Yeah. So now we've come for a very long way. We're not, you know, every single household thinks of a homosexual as someone who has a mental disorder. And that's been in within, I think, a good 10 to 20 years, we've come that far, which is very, very, which leaves me a lot of faith for us for the next 10 or 20 years, because if we can already be accepting of, or as accepting as we can of having, like, political figures who identify as openly gay, you know, here today, even as, you know, taboo as it is now, 30 years ago, it would have been sinful. It would have been disgusting. It would have been demented if we had a homosexual person representing us, not, you know, in office. And now it's totally different because we got out there, and because there were movies made, and because certain people stood up and did make movies that were excellent portrayals of who we were as a community.
And then what about the people who do not necessarily portray us in a positive manner? Because there are still those.
Oh, absolutely.
And there will be those. And there will be people who, you know, portray other minorities poorly. I mean, just think about how many movies you've watched where a certain ethnicity was, you know, was degraded because of who they were. Even though that's totally not, you know, how it truly is. It's a stereotype.
Exactly. Blaxploitation films of the 1970s. My God. I love watching those, but at times I think, really, we do not all wear afros, say bad mama jamma, carry guns around, and smoke weed and have sex all day. Just as not all gay people have been abused or, you know, just so mentally ill. But, you know, you look at it then and you look at it now, and it's just, it's not about color all the time. The character of, what is it, that doctor on Grey's Anatomy was meant actually for, like, some Irish chick or a white chick. And now an African-American woman is playing it. I forget her name, but anyway, if you watch Grey's Anatomy, you know who I'm talking about. So I think you know, it's come a long way for people of color, and I think it'll continue. I'll actually be optimistic with Christopher on this one. I think we will have more positive portrayals of GLBT, the community. But I think a lot of it as a director, I think a lot of it is, oh, well, you know, while we are still a much more liberal society, we still have people that are so very conservative. You know, on certain episodes of television, we'll have a gay character. They'll have, oh, well, like, this show is about this, and must be warned, you know.
And then there are those shows who, whenever they do have the occasional gay character on, they somehow always have AIDS.
Exactly.
But that's not like that anymore. Truly.
Not as severe.
Oh, well, sure.
Well, and I think they should have a few of them. But
yeah, because it's truth. So much of it is truth.
Yes, but you hardly ever see a show on television where there's a straight person with AIDS.
Oh, that's so not true. Watch a medical show. I think out of all of the medical shows I have watched, the majority of portrayals of people with, like, HIV, I've seen. It has been in heterosexual people.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, within the past few years, I read a statistic that said the most common person, an individual to be affected by HIV was a heterosexual
African-American female.
Black.
Right. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I've seen that in our media and all of these things. Now, I mean, of course, media still does not portray anyone as good as it should. I mean, it doesn't even to talk about, like, young females growing into who they are as womanhood. I mean, young men growing into man. I mean, you've got this picture in your mind of what men should be, of what women should be, of how we should look like, of what we see on the magazines. I mean, truth be told, nothing is shown accurately through the media. But the evolution we've had and being portrayed truthfully and positively, and almost, you know, we're getting to this point of indifference where, like, if we have a sitcom and if there's a gay person, the entire sitcom isn't about that gay individual.
Never is.
It's become to where it's like, oh, he's gay, or oh, she's a lesbian, or oh, they're straight. It's becoming this indifferent thing is what we need, because I think that indifference helps us to be more comfortable with acceptance. Because if we don't gawk at it, if we don't spend time focusing on it in, you know, elementary schools and then in workplaces and then in corporations, we're not going to gawk and focus on people being gay in the establishment, which is very, very cool.
It's very awesome.
Something I'd like to talk about is Coming Out Day. It's October 11th, which is this Thursday. October is Gay History Month. And that's something that I think if you don't have any connection with the gay community, you probably won't hear on the news them mentioning National Coming Out Day. So I'd like to take this time and talk a little bit about what that is and what that stands for someone who's in our GLBT community. National Coming Out Day is observed on October 11th by members of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community and their allies. It is highly encouraged for participants in this movement to wear identifying symbols such as the pink triangle, the Greek letter lambda, and rainbows in jewelry and on their clothing to demonstrate their presence in all walks of life, all ages, and all ethnic groups.
The day was founded by Dr. Robert Eichberg and Jean O'Leary in 1988 in celebration of the Second National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights 1 year earlier, which was 500,000 people marched on Washington, D.C. for gay and lesbian equality. National Coming Out Day events are aimed at raising awareness of the LGBT community among the general populace in an effort to give a familiar face to the LGBT rights movement.
In the United States, the Human Rights Campaign manages the event under the National Coming Out Project, offering resources to LGBT individuals, couples, parents, and children, as well as street friends and relatives to promote awareness of LGBT families living honest and open lives. Candace Gingrich became the spokesperson for the day in April 1995. Despite its name, National Coming Out Day is observed worldwide. How awesome.
Very cool.
And I really like how that paragraph ended. We got that information off of a website. If you go to Google and you put in National Coming Out Day, the very first link I clicked on and got this information. And the last line is, despite its name, National Coming Out Day is observed worldwide, which goes back to the first paragraph about how people wear symbols of their identity to kind of demonstrate and to, you know, acknowledge the fact that in all walks of life, in all ethnicities, in all ages, that there are people linked to this community, how powerful that is, and it's worldwide. You know, we just don't have gays in America. We just don't have gays, and you know, in the UK. I mean, we are everywhere because we are all walks of life, just like how we have every ethnicity, you know, everywhere. You know, we just don't have black people in America. There aren't just black people in Africa, you know, and that's a very, very powerful point.
97 to let everyone know you're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org.
Fine. So, I'd like to talk about plans for National Coming Out Day. Do y'all have any plans for National Coming Out Day?
I do. I'm going to douse myself in rainbows.
Sweet.
You stole my idea.
I got this cute little rainbow pin. I'm going to wear on the lapel of one of my shirts. I'm going to wear my little rainbow studded belt. I'm going to wear my rainbow bracelets. I'm going to be, I'm here, I'm queer, you know. And, you know, I'm going to let everybody know that I'm wearing this because it's National Coming Out Day and I'm a gay male. And, you know, I'm here. We're everywhere.
How awesome.
And what about you? From an older perspective.
Well, I am out in every part of my life, but and that includes work. I will probably tell my coworkers and educate them about National Coming Out Day, which it's funny because just a couple months ago I talked about the need and the Pride Day and the Pride celebration, the parade, and what that was about, and Stonewall, and the history regarding that. So I'll probably just take it as an opportunity to educate some of my coworkers.
That's groovy. I dig that. On National Coming Out Day, that's Thursday. So this Thursday, a few of my friends and I were talking about what we had going on Thursday, and I have math class on Thursday, and I go to college, which is cool. What I'm doing on National Coming Out Day is, I think it's kind of different in this situation. I'm the only transgender person here, and it's not like being gay. It's not like being gay, and you can be out with it and be safe most of the time. Being transgendered, if I'm out being transgendered, I won't be allowed into public restrooms. I won't be allowed to talk to certain people. I won't be allowed to look at a certain person for too long because it's getting too creepy because that guy's looking at me. And so at school, what they see me as is just this normal kid in class who's always very quiet because when I speak, you can tell my voice is female. And I usually pass really well when I'm not talking. So, you know, so on National Coming Out Day, what I've been talking about with a few friends of mine is we're going to make shirts that say FTM and the Superman logo. And FTM is not a thing where you see it and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, he's transgender or he's gay or he has some link to the LGBT community. It's something where you have to ask about what an FTM is, and that's female to male. So that's what I plan on doing for Thursday, which is cool. It's a little risky, but I'm okay with taking risks. I think it's good to take risks sometimes. I think it can educate people because even the most normal person you can see in a classroom, you know, you wonder about them because, yeah, he looks really effeminate in the face. Now when he speaks, he kind of sounds like his voice didn't drop during puberty. And then to realize, well, he's not just weird, he's transgender. And that can be a very educational experience and can also put myself in a very discriminating position. But I look forward to it.
Awesome.
That's great.
You are a brave one.
Very cool. And so, National Coming Out Day isn't mentioned in media as often as it should be. Like, I think on the news, you know, National Coming Out Day should be like a pinpoint because we talk about Christmas. We talk about black history on the news. We talk about events going on, but very, very rarely will you turn on the news and you'll be like, oh man, they're talking about National Coming Out Day. And that's a very good thing. That's a very good light to put on the gay community because it's educational. And what we also don't see in the news quite as often, of course, we see negative things portraying us in the media all the time because of the lack of understanding. But something that's really, really come to my attention lately that I really, really wanted to talk about with youth and with anyone that's got a connection to the gay community or to any community itself is a syphilis. From what I've heard and my understanding, by our mayor, Bill White, the city of Houston has been put under a state of emergency because of syphilis. And we are second in the nation to be affected by syphilis so much. And that's huge.
Wow.
And whatever hits a city will hit the gay community 10 times harder. Whatever hits the gay community will hit the transgendered community 10 times harder because of the lack of understanding, because of the lack of understanding and acceptance in the gay community. It just turns out that way. And so syphilis is really a big thing. It's one of the most deadly STDs and one of the most invisible STDs. Syphilis is a sexually transmitted disease caused by bacteria, Trypanosoma pallidum. I'm going to go ahead and take a shot at it. Anyways, it's often known as the great imitator because so many of the signs and symptoms are indistinguishable from other diseases.
In the United States, health officials reported over 32,000 cases of syphilis in 2002, including 6,862 cases of primary and secondary syphilis. In 2002, half of all primary and secondary syphilis cases were reported from 16 counties and one city. And most primary and secondary syphilis cases occurred in persons 20 to 39 years of age. The incidence of infectious syphilis was highest in women 20 to 24 years of age and in men 35 to 39 years of age. Reported cases of congenital syphilis in newborns decreased from 2001 to 2002, with 492 new cases reported in 2001, compared to 412 cases in 2002.
And I'd like to point out that within this past year, I don't know the exact amount and the exact stat of this, I'm about to read the next paragraph, but in this past year, our rates for syphilis in the city of Houston and in our country have escalated extreme. And between 2001 and 2002, the number of reported P&S syphilis cases increased 12.4%. And that was in 2002, and it's 12.4%, which is a lot. And if we kind of fast forward to where we are now, that's huge. And so there's a huge, you know, difference in what's going on and how bad this is increasing.
Syphilis is passed from person to person through direct contact, the syphilis sore. Sores occur mainly on the external genitals, vagina, anus, or the rectum. Sores also can occur on the lips and in the mouth. Transmission of the organism occurs during vaginal, anal, or oral sex. Pregnant women with the disease can pass it to their children if they are carrying. Syphilis cannot be spread through contact with toilet seats, doorknobs, swimming pools, hot tubs, bathtubs, shared clothing, or eating utensils.
And the rate at which syphilis is growing here in the city of Houston is because of the lack of understanding of how you can get syphilis and the stages of it. In the first stage of syphilis, you can actually get rid of it. It is cured. You no longer have syphilis. When you get into the secondary stage and the late stage, it will start to rot your brain. It will start to deteriorate your entire body, and you will die because of an STD, which is terrifying. It's almost like a little HIV. And
well, it was before penicillin. Discovery of penicillin. Syphilis killed people. It killed a lot of people, so.
Well, that's insane. Yeah. Many people infected with syphilis don't have any symptoms for years, yet remain at risk for late complications if they are not treated. There are three stages of syphilis. The primary stage of syphilis is usually marked by the appearance of a single sore called a canker, but there may be multiple sores. The time between infection with syphilis and the start of the first symptom can range from 10 to 90 days. The average is 21 days. The canker is usually firm, round, small, and painless. It appears at the spot where syphilis entered the body. The canker lasts 3 to 6 weeks and heals without treatment. However, if adequate treatment is not administered, the infection progresses to the secondary stage.
Skin rash and mucous membrane lesions characterize the secondary stage. This stage typically starts with the development of a rash on one or more areas of the body. The rash usually does not cause itching. Rashes associated with secondary syphilis can appear as the canker is healing or several weeks after the canker is healed.
The characteristic rash of secondary syphilis may appear as rough, red, or reddish-brown spots, both on the palms of the hands and the bottoms of the feet. However, rashes with a different appearance may occur on other parts of the body, sometimes resembling rashes caused by other diseases. Sometimes rashes associated with secondary syphilis are so faint that they are not noticed. In addition to rashes, symptoms of secondary syphilis may include fever, swollen lymph nodes, sore throat, patchy hair loss, headaches, weight loss, muscle aches, and fatigue. The signs and symptoms of secondary syphilis will resolve with or without treatment, but without treatment, the infection will progress to the latent and late stages of disease.
The latent stage or hidden stage of syphilis begins when secondary symptoms disappear. Without treatment, the infected person will continue to have syphilis, even though there are no signs or symptoms. Infection remains in the body. In the late stages of syphilis, it may subsequently damage the internal organs, including the brain, nerves, eyes, heart, blood vessels, liver, bones, and joints. This internal damage may show up many years later. Signs and symptoms of the late stage of syphilis include difficulty coordinating muscle movements, paralysis, numbness, gradual blindness, and dementia. The damage may be serious enough to cause death.
So this stuff is pretty heavy, and it's pretty serious, and I was notified of, like, how bad syphilis had gotten, and I wasn't completely, I'd heard of syphilis, I've been tested for syphilis, and, I mean, I've noticed it's one of the bad STDs, but I had no idea the state that our city of Houston was in until a month ago, and when I heard this, I became really, really concerned for my friends, my young friends in the gay community, because first off, young people have a tendency to make stupid mistakes and won't do anything to do that. Like, a lot of my friends won't get tested because they're too scared or they're too lazy or they don't really think they have anything. I have friends who don't practice safe sex, and that's extremely worrying because, like, you know, I don't want to lose someone to something that could be prevented. You know, because it's totally different. And then I do have friends who practice safe sex, and I do have friends who do get tested, and I think that's a really, really good thing to practice. And to get tested for syphilis, here in Houston, you can go to any clinic, and a blood test is going to determine whether or not you have syphilis. Some healthcare providers can diagnose syphilis by examining material from a canker using a special microscope called a dark field microscope. If syphilis bacteria is present in the sore, they will show up when observed through the microscope. A blood test is another way to determine whether someone has syphilis. Shortly after infection occurs, the body produces syphilis antibodies that can be detected by an accurate, safe, and inexpensive blood test. A low level of antibodies will stay in the blood for months or years, even after the disease has been successfully treated. Because untreated syphilis in a pregnant woman can infect and possibly kill her developing baby, every pregnant woman should have a blood test for syphilis. So, even if you take care of syphilis within the first stage, the next time you go get tested for syphilis, you're still going to show up positive, and it's just going to be a gradual decrease. It will eventually go away by the antibodies, but you will show positive for syphilis for a long time after.
Genital sores, cankers caused by syphilis make it easier to transmit and acquire HIV sexually. There's an estimated 2 to 5-fold increased risk of acquiring HIV infection when syphilis is present. Ulcerative STDs that cause sores, ulcers, or breaks in the skin and mucous membranes, such as syphilis, disrupt barriers that provide protection against infections. The genital ulcers caused by syphilis can bleed easily, and when they come into contact with oral and rectal mucosa during sex, increase the infectiousness of and susceptibility to HIV. Having other STDs is also an important predictor for becoming HIV infected, because STDs are a marker for behaviors associated with HIV transmission.
Syphilis is easy to cure in its early stages. A single intramuscular injection of penicillin, an antibiotic, will cure a person who has had syphilis for less than a year. Additional doses are needed to treat someone who has had syphilis for longer than a year. For people who are allergic to penicillin, other antibiotics are available to treat penicillin. Ooh, thank God. There
are no remedies or over-the-counter drugs that will cure syphilis. Treatment will kill the syphilis bacterium and prevent further damage, but it will not repair damage already done. Because effective treatment is available, it is important that persons be screened for syphilis on an ongoing basis if their sexual behaviors put them at risk for STDs. Persons who receive syphilis treatment must abstain from sexual contact with new partners until the syphilis sores are completely healed. Persons with syphilis must notify their sex partners so that they can also be tested and receive treatment if necessary.
The surest way to avoid transmission of STDs, including syphilis, is to abstain from sexual contact or to be in a long-term mutually monogamous relationship with a partner who has been tested and is to be known unaffected. Which one time, I think one of the first times we talked about STDs here on the Hatch Radio Show, you posed the best question and you asked, when is it okay to stop practicing safe sex with a partner? And like that blew my mind, because I was like, that was kind of my rule of thumb when I was with someone for so long. It was like, okay, well, we're going to be free now.
Right.
And it's like, because you can't trust anyone to be perfectly monogamous. It's like, when do you trust someone enough? When you're 30, when you're married?
Sure.
And so here saying to be in a long-term relationship, even that's scary, because what if they don't know? Or what if they got tested? Or what if it showed up later? What if they got it because they bumped into someone who had a sore on their arm? Because that's how you can contract syphilis. Anything from unsafe sex to bumping into someone who has a sore and it touching your skin. It's very, very easy. To get more information, you can call the STD information and referrals to STD clinics 1-800-CDC-INFO. And our resources for that was Googling syphilis, and the first link I clicked on, and that was the National Prevention Information Network and the American Social Health Association.
I think one of the important things to remember about syphilis is that you can protect yourself by wearing a condom and having your partner wear a condom, but you can still transmit the disease.
Because when of you the wear cankers.
Right, depending on where the canker sores may be.
Right, which is totally scary, because, you know, whoever thinks, well, I'm not going to go be sexually active because I have a sore in my mouth. We very rarely think of that, because it becomes normal sometimes, you know, cold sores.
Sure.
You know, little, you know, the herpes, that's the okay herpes, the safe herpes, you know. But what if what you thought was a cold sore was a canker caused by syphilis? You would have no idea.
Well, like the information said, cankers often don't usually have pain to them.
Right, right.
And the real danger, I think, with syphilis is that it is an opportunistic disease that will make you more susceptible to HIV. And, of course, HIV there is no cure for.
Right.
Syphilis, you can take some antibiotics and you're okay.
Right.
But in the point that you made, I think you made it very clear, is that it's important to know and catch it early. This is not one of those things that you want to put your hand in the sand and just think it'll go away. The sores will, sure. But the disease.
And then it'll end up killing you eventually.
Right. And when people, I've met people who've had STDs, and they explain the relief that they have when their symptoms do go away. After a, you know, genital wart will go away. Because they're so scared, even though they know better, and even though a lot of us do know better, we feel this relief if we had a symptom. And it's like, woo, I'm in the clear, right. That wart went away. Right. Woo, I'm in the clear, that canker sore went away. And it's like, even though we would like to think we're perfect, we don't have any STDs, we'll never have the terrible thing called HIV, you can't be ignorant to that.
Right. That is why every sexually active person, period, but especially in the GLBT community, but every person needs to be tested for a variety of different STDs every year.
Right. It doesn't matter if you're 13, and it doesn't matter if you're 83. If you're sexually active, if you're gay, or if you're straight, you have no idea. You know, I have no idea who you've been with. You have no idea what you're doing. And a really good rule of thumb that I learned when I did learn about the state of emergency that our city of Houston has been put into because of syphilis, the person I was talking to said to me, when I have sex with someone, I assume that everyone is HIV positive.
Absolutely. I firmly believe that. That's
right.
My philosophy.
And when I really sat and thought about it, I said, if I assumed every person I came in contact with was HIV positive, even though I already practice safe sex, I would probably be a lot safer. And that really inspired me to jumpstart that safety. Because you know, if y'all assumed that everyone was HIV positive, would you live your life differently?
Well, and I think the other thing, especially with HIV, there are certain things you can do to protect yourself. I personally have been intimate with people who are HIV. It's a discussion, it's honesty, it's letting people know what your status is, and you protect yourself, and you're okay. You take precautions. But not everyone will tell you that. Not everyone will say, by the way, I'm HIV positive. So you just have to assume everyone is.
Right, and not everyone will know, because what if that person had a symptom, but it went away, so they were in the clear, so they're like, well, woo, I don't have HIV. Because we're terrified. It's not like people want to be ignorant. It's not like anyone wants to have HIV and wants to go out and infect the world. No one has that desire, but it's fear, because no one wants to be diagnosed with such a terrible, awful thing.
And, you know, talking a little bit about other STDs, in women in particular, like gonorrhea, there's not a lot of symptoms for a woman who has gonorrhea. With men, it's more noticeable.
Yeah, with a few of them, they are asymptomatic, like HPV. Men are asymptomatic
with
that.
Right, that's right. And with gonorrhea, women typically don't show those type of signs of infection, so they won't even know that they're infected. So that's why it's important for
And then things like that can cause a pelvic inflammatory disease, and they can make you sterile, unable to have children.
That's right. And chlamydia, too. I know in men, a lot of times, chlamydia is asymptomatic.
Right, and when you have a, you know, some of the worst things about having an STD is that when you have an STD and it causes, like, cancer, like HPV will cause cancer, it's not just cancer of the ovaries or of your uterus. I mean, that cancer spreads, and it can deteriorate your entire body, just like how syphilis starts to rot your brain. Mm-hmm. Who would ever think that an STD would rot your brain? Like, that's beyond me. You know,
there's some people who think that HPV actually might be associated with rectal cancer in men.
Hmm. Wow. Interesting. But, I mean, I think that was a good point about bringing up how women sometimes have little or no symptoms. You know, and even when they do, a lot of weird stuff happens with women anyways. So, you know, it's just like, I'm just going to assume. Just to touch on the comedy of that. But, anyways, so, these are certain things we should see in the media. I know I have not seen, when I've turned on the news, I have not seen any notifications that syphilis has caused our city to be in a state of emergency, that our mayor declared it. I mean, where was I when he made this decision? You know, I didn't hear about that. I heard about that from a friend, you know, a long time later. It's only been a month that I've known that we're in such of a terrible condition. Why don't more people know this? How come I didn't know this 2 months ago? What if I had done something awful? You know, what if I bumped into someone? You know? And these are the types of things we aren't seeing on the news. On the news, we don't hear about Coming Out Day. We don't hear about National Coming Out Day and about how it reflects the positive things about our community and, you know, into our society and in better light. And we don't, you know, have the best portrayal of us sometimes, and in this lack of portrayal with things like Coming Out Day and with things like STDs growing within our community, you know, we're missing out on valuable stuff, we're missing out on great memories, and we're missing out on great warnings.
Another thing I think should be in the media is the portrayal of every possible gender across the spectrum. You know, everybody's, I know there's as many genders as there are people in the world, but you know, they need to have like, nobody thinks a gay man is like, a lot of people think that gay men can't be masked, and they always think like, oh, hey guys, how you doing? But no, we're not all like that. I mean, one of my exes was like the biggest macho guy you'd ever see. He's 6'2", bodybuilder build, you know, has a very deep voice. But he was gay, probably more gay than I am. But I think they should, you know, show that there are, you know, so many people that break that stereotype.
Right.
If not that, you know, the actual stereotype is actually a small percentage of the community. You know, there's so much they should show.
And this is the desperation to label something we don't understand and we don't want to understand.
Well,
because I think every single one of us in this room totally ban stereotypes women in our community.
Yeah, I think that's true. The other reason I think people associate gays with feminine men or overly masculine women is because walking down the street, those are the people that will stand out to someone who is, I guess, straight or someone who's not overly exposed to people knowingly that they're GLBT. It's and I just cringe saying this, and I don't mean it, but the more I wanted to say regular, but that's not what I mean. But the less stereotypical gay man or lesbian woman walking down the street, a person's not going to say, oh, that's a gay guy, and he's kind of masculine, or, oh, that's a lesbian, and she's not, you know, butchy dykey. So those people aren't identified in everyday life.
Yeah, but that's why we need things like that in the media to open people's eyes up.
And that's why we need to come out to our friends, family, and neighbors.
I was just about to say, the best thing to inspire change is to be that change.
Right.
I know within my own personal story, being a trans man, I am not butch at all. I'm very masculine and very manly. But, you know, my interests are totally different from the average, regular, you know, man.
Oh, gosh, I'm sorry. I'm just...
And we have just something to put it as, you know, this is our way of connecting. But, and I think that's really important. And I know, Aja, I mean, you ban so many stereotypes within everything you stand for, which is so important. And every person you come in contact with, you enlighten them to things that are different, which is, I think, what every one of us should do, which is why Coming Out Day is cool. Because, you know, who would have guessed that, you know, the black girl in class would be this, you know, huge feminist and lesbian? Who would have guessed that this quiet guy at work would be, you know, gay, you know? Even though it's not the case. But you get what I'm trying to...
Because I am out and proud.
I know. And you work at a gay establishment. So that, you know, but if we see you walking down the street and if you don't open up your mouth...
Actually, no. Listen, I've had several people tell me, you know, after meeting me, they were like, I didn't know you were gay until you told me. Several people have let me know that. But I am not quite so obvious as people think I am. So,
I think that's
for those of you who can't see that, I was sticking out my tongue.
I think that's cool. I mean, it's always good to pass. But, you know, when you tell people your story, you know, people have a new respect for who you are and what you stand for. And that's important because that adds a lot of history to an individual and that adds a lot of history to our community.
You know, you put a nice spin on this because most of us don't wait till National Coming Out Day to come out. Because I don't know when it was, but it certainly wasn't in the month of October or some other time. But so I think sometimes we think, what's the relevance of National Coming Out Day? You know, I've been out, I'm out, I didn't need a day to do it. But by taking the opportunity to educate friends, family, coworkers, neighbors, I think that's the new way to look at National Coming Out Day for those of us who have been out for a long time.
And that's fantastic, because it's become so mediocre to us. It's like, oh, well, we've been out forever.
Right.
But hey, when you're in a normal situation, when you're at a gas station, or when you're in a college classroom, or when you're at a workplace, you know, maybe not everyone knows that you're different in a way. You're unique in your sexuality or in your gender identity, and that's really, really rad. Like, I mean, that's very outstanding. And when you don't stand out. And I think that's very cool and a very great way to educate people. Because not everyone knows. And it's like the day of silence. The importance of the day of silence is to be silent for an entire day to celebrate, not celebrate, but to focus on the silence of what GLBT people have been put through because of what's happened and the terrible things that have happened to us. You know, I remember for every single day of silence, I did crazy things, you know, being silent for an entire day at school, going to work and not talking just to get the point across. And people were like, you know, why do you got to be so dramatic and taking a total, you know, 24 hours vow of silence just because some people hurt some gays? And it's like, you know, that's the point, but it's not the point because it's so much bigger, because the silence of what we go through as individuals and of the silence that I go through, you know, at school, I don't tell a single person about me because I fear for my life. I mean, in all actuality, I think I'm okay, but, you know, that is silence, and that's not okay silence. And silence about anything, silence about STDs, silence about, you know, Hatch, you know, I mean, you know, if we spoke out about these things, that creates a better understanding and better intelligence for our entire community to go around. You know, because there's enough information to go around. You know, we can all be just as smart as the other person.
Very awesome.
Don't you guys think?
I think it's fabulous.
If I just stopped talking for a day, I think people would think I was sick or something.
Me too.
It was hard not to talk for a day. It really,
I never shut up.
It really was.
No, you don't.
I tried to inspire my family to not talk for an entire day. And, of course, since they were big and grown-up adults, they couldn't be silent for an entire day. But what I did do with my family, I think three silence days ago, so 3 years ago, I think I took my entire family, and for, like, a good, like, 30 minutes, we took this meditation and acknowledged the silence. And, I mean, no one else in my family has any connection to the GLBT community other than they have a brother and they have a son who is in this GLBT community. So, I mean, if you weren't of a certain denomination and you took 30 minutes silence to recognize that, I mean, I just think that broadens your horizons. That makes you a more open-minded person. You know, talking about STDs you don't have, talking about STDs, you know, you'll probably never get because you're practicing safe sex makes you more open-minded. And by being more open-minded, you educate better. Because I know every single person in my family supports everyone in the GLBT community. And in their workplaces, they defend those people. And they aren't gay.
But I also think that the reason why some people may not respect that is people don't so openly gay bash anymore. So others will say, well, oh, it's not so bad now, so what's the point? It's just like people who don't see the meaning of Black History Month or Cinco de Mayo and all that. It's like, well, oh, I mean, it's all hunky-dory now. Nobody's being all racist and lynching and all that and all that. So what's the point? But I think we should always honor and respect it because we can never forget how it used to be.
And that's terrible because if we don't know how it used to be, that could return to how it was. And you said something very that stood out to me. And you said, you know, people don't so much openly gay bash anymore. I totally disagree with that because at my workplace, they gay bash, you know, gay men, lesbian women. And the thing I've heard most, what I think is incredibly ironic, they bash transgendered people. If I had a nickel from every time that I heard someone say, oh, this he, she just walked in, or this tranny just walked in, I could probably buy the place that I work at because it's happened so much. And obviously, I seem very normal to them. And it's like, you have no idea that someone you work with and the silence that I take because of my safety hears these things. And because they think I'm normal, so that's why they say those things. Obviously, no one would be racist around you openly because, like, oh, well, I don't want that girl to think I'm racist. Mm-hmm. And someone around you, if they knew that you were gay, they probably wouldn't take that initiative to gay bash because, like, oh, I don't want the guy to think of gay bashing. When, you know, it's not that people don't do it openly anymore, but when they do it, it's okay. No one says, hey, stop talking like that.
That's right.
I've never stood up in my workplace and said, don't talk about someone like that because of their gender identity, because I'm too scared for myself.
Right,
and,
of course.
And that's like, you know, that's survival of the fittest, which, I mean, I don't think that's a great route to take, but desperate times call for desperate measures.
I've started, whenever someone in my office says, that's so gay, I have challenge them on that. And I'm sorry, what exactly do you mean by that? Because, you know, and it's an interesting dynamic because they know I'm gay, and mm-hmm. so it brings up a discussion about that. And it's funny because someone had said that's so gay, and then several of my coworkers stood up and, you know, their ears perked up and they looked over at me waiting for me to give my oh, really?
I've done that a few times too. I'm like, okay, what do you mean by that's so gay? And I'm like, well, it's stupid. Not all gay people are stupid. Right. Stupid does not mean gay. Gay does not mean stupid.
Right.
And
why don't you say that's so stupid instead of that's so gay?
Right.
You know, no, what if I said that's so straight?
Yeah, and no one would say, you know, anyone with a brain would never say that's so homosexual. Because that doesn't make sense. It just doesn't. But I've heard people say that before, but
really?
They just don't have brains.
That's so straight.
My notebook isn't homosexual because we wrote all on it. I think it is now officially homosexual. It has been adopted into the GLBT community.
You better keep those pages separated.
No, but let me rephrase what I was saying then, Christopher Michael. People
aren't openly they aren't committing as many hate crimes openly, you know, physically beating someone up because they're as much.
That's not true either.
Okay, fine. It is reported.
I'm going to challenge you on whatever you say.
We don't. I know. Oh, sweetie, I will go there with you. Fine, then. It's not so open and out there every single day.
Even though it does happen it is not necessarily reported, it still does happen.
No, and when hate crimes are happening, it's not reported, which is...
Yes.
And then, you know, if a hate crime results in a death, and, you know, the person is convicted and sent to jail for murder, they don't necessarily know that it's a hate crime because the person who it was done to has been killed, so they can't tell them, hey, they were telling me this because they did it because I was a faggot.
Or are lesser witnesses, but the witnesses don't want to out themselves, so they're silent.
Or it's not even categorized as a hate crime, right. Actually it is.
Mm-hmm. Right. However, to shed some positive light on hate crimes here in Houston, we are one of the cities with the lowest rate in our country, which I think is outstanding. But with hate crimes, you know, specific things that we never hear about in the news, the Day of Remembrance. Do y'all know what the Day of Remembrance is?
No.
The Day of Remembrance, D-O-R, is a day where we acknowledge all the hate crimes against transgender people.
Wow.
It's always, here in Houston, it's always held at the Holocaust Museum. And I remember the first one I went to, it was outstanding. Because it was not only focusing on the negative aspects of, oh, this is the day we're remembering our dead. You know, because it's terrible. But at the very end, they spoke about how Houston is actually doing better with hate crimes, how we're actually getting more acknowledgement when hate crimes do happen. Even though that's positive, you know, that is like a spitball on the huge, you know, canvas of hate crimes because there's so many. There are millions of names on these lists. There are millions of stories we share. And people celebrate the Day of Remembrance everywhere. You know, people have candlelight vigils, people have presentations, they have ceremonies, they have all of these things. People will storytell these stories of these people, and no one in this room has heard of the Day of Remembrance, except I have. And that's, except you have too. And so that's like the lack of media, and the lack of, you know, us telling each other. You know, and I mean, and that's, you know, that's why GLBT people in the media should be portrayed in a positive light, in an accurate and honest light. Because, you know, some of us have died, and we focus on that. You know, we come out, so we focus on that.
Oh.
I think they should have an after-school special about, you know, some GLBT kid coming out to his parents.
You know, we've had that before.
What we're doing at Hatch right now, we are... You know, I don't know everything about this, but we are taking a person that has been involved with the GLBT community for every day of the month, I believe, I don't want to misinform, and of a person that's been outstanding in our community. Like, have you ever heard of Harvey Milk?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I hadn't until 3 days ago where I read a paragraph about him in an English book trying to find the typos in it.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I learned about Harvey Milk, which was very cool, and that was one more person I knew about.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Harvey Milk, because I think he's an important figure in our GLBT history.
Let's inform the masses.
He was, I don't know what they title it, I think supervisor, city supervisor in San Francisco, and like city council member would be here in Houston. And one of the other I'm using city council, but I think there were county supervisor or something. I forget the title. But anyway, one of the other people on the city council murdered him and the mayor and blamed it on, I believe the defense was that he had a sugar high.
Right.
Twinkie defense.
Yeah, they called it the Twinkie defense. And they said because he'd eaten so much sugar, for temporarily it took him over and made him want to kill two people.
Right.
Well, what it was is he... Dan White, who was the other supervisor, a former police officer and former fireman who was kind of pushed into running, became and got disillusioned and quit. And so he resigned from the board and was hoping that he would get reinstated to the board of supervisors.
That's right.
And he spent 10 days eating Twinkies and drinking Coke and went and to find out if he was going to be reinstated. And I think Harvey was he went and saw Harvey first. And, you know, Harvey said, you know, look, I'm not going to back you. You quit, you know, too bad. He shot Harvey Milk and then walked down the city hall to Mayor Moscone's office and shot him several times. And he was caught and arrested and tried and given basically a slap on the wrist. And
yeah, that's right.
The city of San Francisco erupted into riots called the White Knights riots. And torched a lot of buildings and police cars. Eventually, when he got out, when Dan White was finally released, had a hard time readjusting to society as being known as the murderer and that, and ended up committing suicide in his garage.
Right.
To put the end of it there.
Wow.
No, that's an example. I know we talked a little earlier, but that's an example of somebody who was out gay and was in public office and was very much in the limelight, the publicity of his day. When did that happen? Was that in the early 70s?
I think that was 78 or not. Let me check here.
I know it was in the 70s. I just don't remember if it was in the beginning or the end of the decade.
And I know it was the 70s. And let's see, Harvey Milk. Thank you, Wikipedia. The assassination was in 78.
Okay.
So.
Well, that's just how red I read that paragraph.
Like I said, just go to Wikipedia and Harvey Milk. In fact, there's going to be a movie coming out about Harvey Milk soon. Gus Van Sant is making one. Another film, and it's Matt Damon is playing. I think Matt Damon is playing Dan White, if I remember correctly. On that, it's got a couple of big names are in there that are going that are in this movie that's coming up. They're getting ready to start filming it.
Hmm. Well, that will certainly attract attention.
Interesting, Houston Grand Opera did a opera on the life of Harvey Milk a few years ago.
Wow.
You can write an opera about anything.
Yeah, that's true.
But no, that's one of the things that I went to San Francisco several years ago when they opened up the Harvey Milk Plaza. It just happened like a couple weeks before I got there, where at the corner of Castro and Market. It's known as the Harvey Milk Plaza, and they have a huge rainbow flag that flies over it. And there's even got a bar named for him down where his camera shop used to be,
mm-hmm.
Down on Castro, called Harvey's.
It's kind of a small plaza. I mean, when you think of plaza, you think of like something a block big.
Yeah.
But it's not.
It sits right over.
Yeah,
a subway station.
Yeah, it's
go to the Castro.
Well, that's fantastic.
It is,
and one of the things you can, especially with this being GLBT History Month, you'll be able to find a lot of stuff coming up on that. If you have Logo, mm-hmm. I know they're covering a lot of the stuff. And,
yeah.
In fact, one of the links I think I'm going to play this one here because there's a one website that talks about has 31 people. For the month of October.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a new person each day.
Yes.
That they have a little video on. And today's is Bessie Smith.
Oh, I wonder if that's where Hatch got the idea. Hatch is doing the same thing.
Oh.
Well, it's GLBT History Month in October.
Yes.
Not that you, like you're saying, you not that you're going to hear about it on...
Right.
In the mainstream, it's, you know, it's one of those things that's... Not going to have time off from school. You're not going to see a display of it in mm-hmm. school. This is, you know, one of the two times that we have our little bit of.
So what's
more
the what's the name of the?
It's GLBTHistoryMonth.com.
Okay,
and it's done by the Equity Forum. So start doing your rap.
Right.
Well, all right. Well, this has been the Hatch segment on After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude.
Yeah, something like that.
And before we disconnect, I want to mention the GLBT hotline. Switchboard.
Gay and Lesbian Switchboard Houston. It is, I believe,
It is
713-529-3211.
Oh, I was going to say 2311. 3211.
I would like to leave everyone with a thought. If everyone listening to this right now would pick a date on the calendar, and that's the day that they will go get tested for STDs from this point on, I think that would be a good improvement.
That's fantastic. I think that's great.
Awesome.
And remember, the Hetch website is www.hetchyouth.org. And the number for Hetch is 713-529-3590. We also have a MySpace page and a MySpace group.
And we're on Yahoo, too. Isn't that fantastic? Anyways, this has been
Aja,
Christopher,
Seth,
and Brendan.
All right,
thank you. We'll do a little music interlude. Our community had a birthday boy a couple days ago.
Oh.
Jason Sellers. You may not know him by that name.
No, I don't.
But you probably know him better by his stage name, Jake Shears. From the Scissor Sisters.
You bet.
He turned 29 on October 3rd.
Whoa, that
ancient.
Old.
Yep. So let's put a little Scissors in your ear. And
please.
Coming up next is Gigi.
Oh, yes,
back.
is her sisters with Filthy Gorgeous. We may be filthy and gorgeous, but yeah. For the birthday boy. I just found out that we had another birthday boy in the community. If you read the rags, where did he go? Down here. Dan Savage. The writer of Savage Love. His birthday is actually today, October the 7th. I guess how old he is?
Who is this?
Dan Savage. Of Savage Love?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Today is his birthday.
How old is he?
I'm going to do the math now, huh?
What year was he born?
64.
64?
43.
Wow.
Yeah. So, he was just recently on Colbert Report.
Mm-hmm.
Defending gay marriage, or I don't know, I kind of turned off at the moment. That was an interesting thing there. You know me, I kind of search around the internet finding...
Yes, you do.
Interesting things.
Yes, you do.
The part I like is Iceman from X-Men. It's his birthday. And more importantly, it's also his twin brother's birthday, too.
It's over my head.
Ever see X-Men?
No.
Oh. Let's put it this way. That boy's got a twin.
Oh, how nice. Mm. Wow.
So you two talk, I'll be...
okay.
Damn it, he's got a girlfriend. Oh, we'll change that.
Hello, Gigi.
Hello.
Welcome back.
It's good to be back again.
Yes, now you're going to be officially on the first Saturday of the month?
Yes.
Is that how you're working it out?
I think so.
Okay. Because I know that other Saturdays, you're busy doing other things.
Yeah.
Clearing land or
well, next,
doing something.
Yeah, I go out to ESA on the second
and ESA
weekend,
is
Earth Spirit Alliance,
uh-huh,
pagan organization.
Yes.
And I've been doing prostitute priestess training,
yes,
out there, and then we also work on the space.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty cool.
You've done a hell of a lot of work out there on the space.
Oh, yes.
Really have.
And the temple shows it. I mean, mm-hmm, we've got a fence all around it now.
Oh, nice.
Wooden fence.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we don't have water back there anymore, but we used to. Well, we ran it through hoses, mm-hmm, and the owner of the property said, okay, no more hoses after one burst, and it ran for days and ran up a big water bill.
Oh, ouch.
So we're out of water till we get I mean, I've got water up front, but...
Yeah, until you get real plumbing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's on the plan,
okay,
to put that in at some point. But anyway, tonight you're listening to the Sacred Sex Show.
Yes.
And tonight I thought I'd talk a little bit about spiritual aspects of BDSM.
Okay. Now you're going to have to do some explaining
about the
basis of all of this.
Basically, BDSM is... basically, sadomasochism.
Mm-hmm. Exchange of power.
Exchange of power between, mm-hmm, consenting adults.
Yes.
And, you know, I kind of studied this, and I don't think there's a single religion known to man that there hasn't been some subsect of that religion that didn't practice some form of BDSM,
mm-hmm,
as a spiritual path.
Yes.
To enlightenment.
Yes.
And one of the things that happens during a BDSM, or can happen during a BDSM session, is that you start releasing all these endorphins, mm-hmm, into your system, and all of a sudden you fly. And I've had out-of-body experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I've had experiences where, you know, I just got in touch with things that weren't physically there.
Mm-hmm.
Got in touch with a part of myself and the part of the person I was playing with that was more at that spiritual level, that connection. And so, and a lot of people think BDSM's all about pain. But, you know, one of the things I discovered early on when I got into it was that it's not really so much about pain. I don't feel pain.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when I stub my toe, it hurts. I don't like pain.
Okay.
But when I get into a real intense BDSM session, whether I'm topping or bottoming, it can be intense sensations, mm-hmm. but it, and it may be better to describe it as erotic pain.
Okay.
It's not quite the same thing as actual pain. And so it takes me to these heights. And long ago, I came across an article on people with ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And this psychiatrist said that releasing endorphins into the system is really good for the ADHD brain.
Which is why masturbation is good.
Uh-huh. And,
yeah. Anything that will help. It.
Oh, yeah.
And when you get into erotic pain,
mm-hmm.
It's more of a pleasurable
experience.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of liken it to, I'm not into that scene much at all. However, mm-hmm. I know that if I'm having sex with someone and nipple play starts,
yeah,
the more we get into it, the harder the nipple play can get.
Yeah.
And exciting. And by the end of it, I'm able to endure quite a bit,
yeah,
of pressure or pain there, mm. and which isn't pain anymore. It's just
it takes you something.
Yes, it does. It does. It does. So I can kind of understand where that's coming from.
And actually, I didn't get into BDSM per se at first.
Mm-hmm.
I had a girlfriend once from Brazil, and women, well, all people really from her country,
mm-hmm.
love passionate sex.
Oh, yes.
With fingernails and biting and.
Okay, okay.
And as the lovemaking goes on, yeah. it gets more impassioned.
Yes.
And.
Yeah, that's where men like to show off
me.
Their backs with the scratches on.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so. As I got into it with her, she would get more intense with me. And all of a sudden, I'd realize, you know, the next day, it's like, wow, I'm calmer than I usually am. I'm more focused. I'm more...
Oh, because we have the endorphin release.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I think this plays a part. I mean, look at many religions where they go through fasting and different types of sleep deprivation, different kinds
fasting,
of deprivation.
Fasting would be, yeah, deprivation is part of BDSM.
Yeah.
That, and I was thinking when you were talking about all religions do some sort of form, the first thing I thought of was the Catholics and the flagellants.
Yeah. They're sad.
Yeah.
Native Americans had the Sundance ritual.
Yes, yes.
Let's see. And there's many different forms. You go back to the ancient temples, and they actually did, in some of them, different types of torture.
Mm-hmm.
Erotic torture.
Mm.
That would help someone gain higher enlightenment. And it would be just kind of exploring these things. And you know, I was thinking about this the other day. I've got a woman that may be taking me on as her submissive scene.
Okay.
So,
wow.
Which I think is going to be pretty awesome. It's been a while since I've gotten into some intense BDSM
yes.
scenes. And I know that in the past, when I've gotten into really intense scenes, I've had some very amazing experiences. One time I was in a scene and it got pretty intense on a physical level, and all of a sudden I was above, kind of in the center of the room, looking down, and saw my body beneath me and him working me. And it was just this incredible sense of floating and out-of-body experience. I've had other experiences where I'd be playing real hard, and all of a sudden I just feel this kind of inner balance and glow and kind of this light feeling of floating. Other time, and you know, I guess part of what helps to kind of understand is, what is a spiritual experience?
Yes.
A lot of times we think that it's got to be something with deity or with some kind of other being present or involved in some way. But often it's spiritual experiences when your spirit releases from the body and is able to just fly. That can be a spiritual experience. It's involving the spirit. The spirit within us. And so when I say spiritual experience or spiritual aspects,
I'm using
a very broad definition of spirit.
Okay.
Spiritual. Do you want to jump in?
Because I have to do it. You're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org.
I love when he does that because he remembers the whole thing.
And
I always look at the aspects of it.
It's going to be hell when they get rid of Galveston on me.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to have to redo all that.
Oh, my. Well, one thing that kind of, I started studying some on the spiritual aspects and on some of the things that occur in our culture that or that occurred in ancient culture that we don't have present in our culture. In ancient Greece, they used to go to the theater, and they did not have a passive audience. During the tragedies, people would bang on the floors, they'd pull their hair out, they'd claw themselves with their nails.
Oh my goodness, they
just
got into it,
this tragedy unfolding in front of them. And the Greeks came up with the word catharsis. And this was a cathartic experience where people could take all the negative emotions, release them in a socially appropriate way, and not bottle them up and have them come out in inappropriate ways.
Yes.
And so we don't really have a device like that in our culture.
No, we certainly don't. We're
And that's one of the voids that BDSM fills, is that it gives us an appropriate place to reach catharsis. And catharsis I define as a type of spiritual experience. It's a cleansing of the spirit, cleansing of the emotions, and a release. Not just a physical release, but this kind of getting rid of all the stuff you've been carrying around. And so that partly is what I mean by spiritual experience.
I guess the closest we have to that is maybe sporting games. And,
and for people that aren't into sports, like me.
But I've seen, especially, it surprised the hell out of me. A friend of mine has a sister who's just sweet and docile as can be. But you take her to a Comets game, and she's standing up, and she's screaming, and she's cursing, and she's she gets it all out. And you know, wow.
So, I mean, you know, you kind of look at these little devices that different societies put into place. Even in ancient Egypt, they had kind of an a flip-flop on things. They're, you know, our holy men grew long hair and beards. And,
yes.
And in ancient Egypt, theirs were shaven.
The whole body.
The whole body.
Yes.
Not just the face or head.
Yeah, especially if they were going into a room that had an icon of their god.
Yeah.
Because they could not...
Right.
Have any hair on their body to go into that room.
Yeah. But, and you look at how, I guess one of the things that kind of came to me is how, from culture to culture, there's no real pattern.
No, you're right.
To spirituality.
No.
From religion to religion. But there are different devices that all religions have some things in common,
mm-hmm.
and some things that are kind of unique to specific religions. And, you know, I get into this kind of spiritual sense, not from a religious base, but more from kind of a personal enlightenment base. I look at it as this healing force, and that's one of the things that I've gotten at, you know, that I see BDSM being especially helpful, especially if you've been, you know, as abused as a child physically and emotionally. And that's where another aspect of BDSM comes in, and that being role play. Being able to regress back to that child that was abused, role play the scene, and then come out empowered because I had safe words.
You had safe words, and you were in control.
I was in control. Whereas, and I gave that inner child the control that that child didn't have when I was 4, 5, or 6.
But you're right about that. The society doesn't have any set way of doing a catharsis.
Right.
Because you go to any psychologist, and or even psychiatrist, but psychologist, and you know, you talk out your problems.
Yeah.
And there's always emphasis on getting the bad emotions out.
Yeah.
But there's no recipe on how to do it.
Exactly.
That's always left up to you.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're kind of left hanging because of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know how to do anything like this, but the BDSM experience certainly is one way.
Yeah. The other thing I've kind of looked at that I find rare, and you kind of touch on that slightly with this, is the power dynamics of BDSM. When you go to church, or when you go into a specific religion and have a relationship with a deity, you're having a power relationship with that deity. The deity is all powerful.
No, sure. And you're not.
Not.
Yes.
In a good BDSM scene, the top is all powerful, and the submissive gives over their power to the top. And all of a sudden, there's this kind of sense of, well, I don't have to decide anything. My top's going to guide me all the way through this.
That's right.
And take me where my top wants me to go. So all of a sudden, it's kind of this sense of stripping away the self for a while. And that, too, can be a very spiritual component of BDSM. Being able to just let yourself go and be in the here and now. When I'm getting into a really heavy scene and someone's whipping my butt, I'm not thinking about grocery shopping tomorrow.
No, and you find that...
I am here in the present moment.
Some very high-powered people in society, people who hold very powerful jobs or are in charge of a lot of other people, they want to get away from that.
Exactly.
And not have power.
Right. They want to give that power over to someone else.
Yes, that's their catharsis.
And especially an erotic power. And that's when it becomes supercharged. I think anything that you create eroticism around, it supercharges whatever that is.
Sure.
Look at foot fetish. you know, people walking down the street, you see their feet, down the beach, bare feet.
Yeah, you know.
Doesn't do
deal.
Much for you.
Right.
But if you develop a foot fetish, all of a sudden it's like it changes.
Or you eroticize and, or do some foot
mm-hmm.
foot play in your lovemaking. Yeah.
And so... And I once had a sexologist tell me that, you know, you can eroticize anything.
Sure.
Anything that you can even conceive of. And I've heard some pretty weird, kinky
yes.
stuff. And I think about that, and that's a very interesting dynamic and a very interesting power. To take something that's ordinary, supercharge it, to where it just grabs your whole focus and your whole attention.
Sure.
And draws you into it.
Sure.
And gets you horny mm-hmm. and wild and passionate and, yeah, gets your juices flowing. And that, to me, is a part of spirituality. In our culture, we tend to look at sex as evil, sex as bad.
Well, that's what they try to teach us.
Yeah.
Those of us who...
Well, and I'd say mainstream
yeah.
society.
Those of us who are sexually experimental or yeah. sexually positive, we have to unlearn all of that
exactly.
to free ourselves from those, from those chains.
Yeah.
And then... find our own way.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the beauties that I found in BDSM,
mm-hmm.
in the spiritual sense, is being able to role play different things.
Sure.
And be able to experience and try out new things. I always thought it was kind of interesting. We live in a country where we're supposed to be free.
Mm-hmm. However...
And... We live in a country where, well, we live in a culture that tends to stress independence and self-expression everywhere except the bedroom.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. But even then, we want that freedom and that self-expression is okay to a point.
Yeah.
You know, there are societal limitations. You know, be original, but not too original. You know, if you're too original, then you're branded as weird.
Yeah.
And you're outside the box, and yeah, you fall in disfavor. So
not always.
There is limitations. And certainly sex is...
But with sex, you
totally,
know,
yeah.
we have this whole thing centered around normal sex in
yes.
our culture.
Man on top, that's it.
And if you don't do normal sex, then it's all, you know, that's the worst taboo you
mm-hmm.
can break,
mm-hmm.
is to do abnormal sex.
Yes.
Or something a little different.
Or something a little different. You know, oral sex can yeah. be considered... outside the box and abnormal. It just... Which
now, I read a thing
me.
About normal sex a while back. And I'm going to do this kind of from memory, but...
Okay.
Normal sex is unnatural. It puts us in a state of loneliness most of our lives. It leaves us in a state of desire, of wanting but never fulfilling. It leaves us... in an unreachable state
mm-hmm.
to ourselves and to with others. Normal puts a box around us.
Oh, yeah.
And fences us in. It makes us afraid to request something from our partner. And
yes.
makes our partners afraid to request something from us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think and this wasn't even a BDSM thing. I had a girlfriend once, and one night she just wanted to play a game. So she went around the house, didn't tell me about this,
mm-hmm.
collected a bunch of different objects that would create different sensations on the body.
Yes.
And she said, she had me build a fire, and then she said, I'm going to blindfold you.
Mm-hmm.
She put the blindfold on. And then she started using all different kinds of things on my body.
Yes.
Everything from, she took a gulp full of semi-frozen champagne in her mouth and went down on my belly button with
no.
it.
No.
And the mixture of a hot tongue and freezing cold champagne in my belly button was just this incredible experience. Not knowing what it was, because I couldn't see, you know. Having a pine cone rolled down my back. Not knowing what it was, just feeling the sensations. Having all these different tactile experiences without the visual. Because sometimes we become so visually oriented, it explains too much.
Mm-hmm.
When you shut that down, the visual context, all of a sudden, it opens up a whole new realm of surprises.
Sure.
And, I mean, it was some of the hottest sex we had that night. And that's a type of BDSM play, that surprise element.
It's
not knowing what's coming next.
The BDSM, I look at it as you're taking in sensation and you're covering it.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be the sense of touch or sight or sound or taste or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also there's a component of BDSM where you get into screwing with the mind a little bit.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely.
And that was how this game was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just...
Because you didn't know what was coming next.
Exactly.
Is it going to tingle? Is it going to hurt a little bit? Is it going to be soft?
Yeah. Silk scarves. I forget. I don't remember what all. She showed me everything in the bag afterwards, but there's everything from clothespins to feather dusters to she even, I think, had either an apple or an orange that she rolled over me.
Really?
And then she did some sense of smell.
Mm-hmm.
She pulled out a bottle of a different... essential oils that had different smells.
Yeah.
And weighed those without my knowing.
Sure.
And put them in a cotton ball and would put them under my nose. And it was just this... I kind of looked back on it. I wrote a poem about it once. And one thing that struck me was this symphony of sensation. And it was just such a magical experience to have this symphony performed on my body. And talk about creative sex. Abnormal sex. It was great.
So the psychological aspect of it was... you didn't know what was coming next, and you were completely in her hands.
Exactly.
Okay.
I think that was part of it, but part of it, too, is that when you sit down and say you trust somebody, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when you put a blindfold on and put that trust to actual practice, that takes trust to a whole different level.
It does.
And it deepens a bond between two people at a much deeper level than just saying, oh, baby, I trust you, I love you. It's like putting it out there.
You do that, and then, you know, then it's just steps to the next levels of BDSM, whether it's binding someone or tying them up or flogging or...
Mm-hmm. But I like to get back to this concept of trust, because a lot of people say, oh, I trust my partner.
But would you really, when it came down to it?
Yeah. And I go, yeah, well, trust is one of those words that's, you know, there's a matter of degree.
Mm-hmm.
How far do you trust?
Well, true. Yes.
And nobody ever qualifies that when they say, oh, I trust you.
Yeah.
And I guess what I'm trying to say is that BDSM kind of qualifies that trust. It makes an experiential occurrence in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you're not just saying words. You're actually experiencing that trust between two people. And that is very powerful.
That's got to deepen a relationship.
Oh, yes. And once again, that gets back to that, what is trust?
Mm-hmm.
Is that not a form of spiritual connection?
Sure it is. Sure it is.
And so I bring this up because, you know, I guess recently I've had a few vanilla people go, well, even outside on the patio, I said BDSM, and everybody yeah, just kind of shrunk
back. Oh, yeah. Yeah, when you talked about what you're doing this segment, you know, everybody was...
They go, ouch, that yeah. hurts.
Yeah.
And so part of why I like to bring spiritual aspects to BDSM and kind of talk about that a little bit is that, you know, all of a sudden it opens the door, or can open the mm-hmm. door for people to say, well, maybe there's something more to this than just, and maybe pain isn't really what's... people are after.
Yeah.
Which is true. I mean,
one person's pain is another uh-huh. person's pleasure. And you people who call themselves vanilla, if they really looked at their likes and dislikes and their experiences, they might not real they might feel they might see that they're not all of that vanilla.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's got a kinky side somewhere.
Something along the way. Yeah, you like your nipples worked on. You like, I don't know.
Bite on the neck.
Yes.
Hickeys.
you know, that can be painful to get. Pain and pleasure both together.
Yeah. It's that erotic pain. It's
yes. yes.
And like I say, I like to distinguish because I don't go around stubbing my toe. You know, I don't like that
fingernails
feeling.
In your back, yes.
But when someone scratches my back
mm-hmm.
and leaves marks, that's a whole different thing.
That's exactly right. I mean, what's the difference between that during a missionary style sexual experience that what's the difference?
Or doggy style.
or doggy style. Or, you know, getting fingernails mm-hmm. in your back enough to make marks.
Yeah.
Or being flogged.
Exactly.
It's the same type of thing.
And I think this is one of the other misimpressions that people get. So every scene I've ever played in, we've always negotiated before the scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Oh,
and,
yes. Very
and
important.
We have kind of signals. A good top will read their submissive's mm-hmm. body language.
Sure.
And I know that the really good tops don't start real hard.
Oh, no, absolutely.
They start
not. Yes.
light and build up.
You build up to
and
it.
And they read their
yes.
submissive's body language. And so there's a lot going on in a scene that's behind the scene.
A lot of psychology
see.
To it, yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that observer wouldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's where some of the misinterpretation comes, is they see a scene take place.
Yeah.
They see someone just wailing on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, wow, that's got to hurt. And no, they didn't start.
They didn't start
or
that
they
way.
Played enough to mm-hmm. where they can get into that headspace mm-hmm. just real quick. Because I've had partners where, you know, we start to play and they can, you know, I played with them enough that all of a sudden I can get in that headspace like a light
sure.
switch going on and off.
Well, because there's a buildup of trust there.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden they can go on me like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And from a spectator's point of view, it's like, wow, that must be painful. They don't see the
yes.
sessions we've been through and the
yes.
negotiations and the things we've discussed. Which brings another thing to this whole spiritual concept, and that's communication.
Mm-hmm.
When we communicate that specifically, we build stronger bonds and closer connections
oh,
to
you
one
bet.
Another.
You bet.
Like, all of a sudden, this whole new door opens. And I think that I've experienced that also in the bisexual community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I meet someone and we get involved, I'm very open and honest. I sit down with partners and say, well, you know, let's talk about safe sex. Let's talk about.
You bet. You bet. Like the Hatch group was talking earlier. They were discussing this, and nowadays, I mean, the whole specter of AIDS is out there. People know about it everywhere.
Yeah.
And nowadays, it takes two. So, everyone knows to use a condom, mm-hmm. or they should, and you should, when you're having sex with anybody, just assume they are HIV positive.
Yeah.
And go from there.
Yeah.
What would you do with an HIV positive person? Mm-hmm. What would you not do with an HIV positive person?
Exactly.
So, you know, just assume everybody is, and...
Or assume they may have any other number of STDs.
Well, that's true, yes.
Because there are some STDs you can get even wearing a condom.
Even wearing a condom, because that virus, germ, or whatever
some
causes
skin
it...
Some skin-to-skin contact.
Can go right through a condom, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I don't think too many would go through a condom, but...
Hepatitis C can.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But, And I think also taking responsibility for oneself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've gone and gotten both my Hep A and B vaccines.
Good for you.
For the people in the temple training, I have them go and get it too.
Good idea.
Not just to protect themselves, but to protect people coming into temple.
Sure.
The patrons.
Sure.
And so...
I had that years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, B, you have to go every 10 years
or
so.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
A, you get two shots and it's good for life.
Mm-hmm.
But B, after a while, you have to renew it.
Oh.
But I think it's like a 10 or 12 year period.
Okay.
And they have to do a blood test to see.
Oh.
If you still have the antibody.
Well, the last time I had a blood test, which was very recent, I did have antibodies.
Yeah. As long as you still have the antibodies in your system, you're okay.
Okay.
Sparse, I know. I never asked the doctor that, but I keep saying, am I due yet? And he goes, no, you still have the antibodies.
You still have the antibodies, so, okay.
So.
Yeah.
But I think that's part of, you know, the thing I've really admired about BDSM community is
and
the responsibility.
Say, yes.
And
when I say assume that everybody that you sleep with is HIV positive, I'm not just talking about the gay community here.
Oh, no.
I'm talking about every sexual community.
Mm-hmm.
Straight, gay, whatever.
And even monogamy won't protect you because people cheat and lie.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
I've met a few of those out at the park.
Well, you know, that's one thing I never promised anybody. No, it's just because I knew I couldn't deliver.
Actually, I promised being polyamorous.
Because you know that's going to happen.
I can live up to that.
Exactly.
But, why don't we go to a music break?
Okay.
And then, I think
actually,
I've covered most of what I wanted to cover.
Okay. Because we've got about a half hour left.
We'll
do a quick wrap up and then run right into the round table.
Sounds
good. How does that sound?
Yeah, it'd be nice if I put all the music outside you.
Oops. Oops. Didn't think we were going to play any more music tonight. Surprise.
That's what you get for sure.
I know. But I know you can always come up with something, Chris.
There we go.
Okay.
Push this button.
That cursed DNA that makes you so perfect yet makes
my friend the writer how happy I would be if he'd write an opening number especially for me. But when he had it finished, it came as quite a shock. He handed me a song titled, How Do You Like My... I said, you can't do that in public. I said even I wouldn't dare. So he made a few small changes. Now I can sing it anywhere. Como te gusta mi pinga en tus pantalones. Como te gusta mi pinga y mis cojones. It's the same old thing in the same old hole, but when you say it in Espanol, it sounds fine. Como te gusta mi pinga, es muy caliente. Como te gusta mi pinga, es grande plenty. You don't go around shouting you're well hung, but when you do it in another tongue, it's just fine. When the hour's late and I don't have a date and I feel that I can't go on, I lift up my head and I stick out my chin and I talk like Montalban. Como te gusta mi pinga, it sounds so neat, like a warm quesadilla or a pork burrito. It's the same old cheese and the same old meat, but when it has a Latin beat, it's okay. Como te gusta mi pinga, ole.
Ay, ay!
Oh, thank you.
Fly me.
that, and then you get a little peppy there at the end.
Thank you.
That was, in reverse order, double shot from the soundtrack of the movie Trick, Dreamweaver by Aaron Hamilton. And since Jimmy wasn't in the room, I was able to play it. ¿Cómo te gusta mi pinga? So, and before that was from the Sordid Lives soundtrack.
Of
Don't Be Gay.
Too late.
Please Don't Be Gay by Sharon Alexis.
Too late. Too late.
But, because I threatened last week that I would play Olivia Newton-John singing Will the Circle Be Unbroken.
Please.
But she plays a lesbian ex-con folk singer. How many redundancies can you find in that sentence?
Yes.
My goodness.
Ouch. Gigi's going to do a wrap-up on...
Yes. We were talking earlier about BDSM and the spiritual aspects of BDSM.
Sure.
And I kind of had a thought when I stepped out for a minute. Everything in BDSM is very paradoxical. It's like the submissive doesn't really feel pain, or can, but it's a different type of pain. Mm-hmm. It's an erotic pain. When you give up power, you get power. So many dynamics occur, and it's just exploring some of the stuff that goes on and reaching that spiritual level of healing and catharsis and bringing it all together that can make us whole again. So with that, why don't we move on to roundtable?
I wrote a line in a poem tonight that said, I'm going to paraphrase it like crazy because I can't remember the exact words, but it's something about wrongness and rightness together experienced in a flux as damnation goes away.
Wow. Well, a little flux is always good.
Oh, yes.
So that's kind of like BDSM.
All right. Who all do we have here in the roundtable?
Yeah, Ozzy.
GG.
Big Roy.
Oh, David. I'm half asleep.
And standing up here, we have a couple people, too.
Scott.
And Mark.
All right.
Full house tonight. What do you got for us, Chris?
Virgin's over here in the...
Oh, yeah.
On the top.
Good. Let's hope he stays there.
Ouch. And Virgin is a male.
But not a virgin male.
All right. Let's see. Here's a lovely little... I love this story just based off of the quotes from it. This is from England. Mother saw coach and girl naked. Mother has spoken of the moment she alleges she found her 13-year-old daughter having sex with the girl's tennis coach. Oh, former tennis professional Claire Light, 29, is accused of 5 counts of sexual activity with a child. The girl's mother told Liverpool Crown Court she returned home early from a party in October 2005 and found the pair naked in bed together. The mother, who cannot be identified, said, I walked into the room and saw my daughter and Claire naked on the bed. I was in complete shock and screamed, and they became aware that I was there.
You think?
My daughter jumped up and ran off, and Claire pulled the bed sheet over her head. I was screaming at Claire, get out! What have you done? What have you done to my child? You're nothing but a pedophile. They came downstairs dressed, and my daughter sat down in a chair and curled into a ball.
Talking about serving a backhand.
Claire sat with her head in her hands. Apparently it was her head in her own hands. And the mother took the daughter back home to the party on there. I would have gone straight to the police, but I've lost my daughter. She was consumed by this person. But she waited a while, and it's in court. There. The girl was coached. Another girl claims that she had a sexual encounter with this coach, who was named Young Coach of the Year in 2001.
I bet.
She was coaching a little bit more than tennis there, huh?
It gives a whole new meaning to Love 15.
Yes, and today's 13-year-olds are so innocent about sex and know nothing about sex or homosexuality.
Of course not.
What's that? Nothing whatsoever.
Hold on, I have to mention this here.
They're innocent.
I, Brian's also going to be throwing in his 2 cents worth. That's all he has.
And he's online.
He's our online listener. Mm-hmm. If he wouldn't have screwed up his car, he could have been here, but, you know. Here's
the Holocaust game for car. We can't have my...
Yeah, yeah, how do you like to mention me that way? All right,
Well, before you move on, I mean, after all, I'd seduce babysitters when I was 5 years old.
I've read those stories. Nifty.
It was great. I mean, as a kid, I was very sexual.
I wished I'd have known how to.
Let's see.
Oh, for the internet when I was young.
Okay. I was in Pennsylvania. I was 78, so I guess I was 6. And the babysitter, she was 18, 19.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it wasn't anything fancy. It was just, you know.
Well, I mean, playing naked doctor and...
Yeah. Naked hugging in the storage shed out front.
Yeah. Mm. It can...
Yeah, those days not.
No.
Okay, let's go to Tola Road. Gay NYPD cop sues Department over threats and harassment. A 5-year veteran with the New York Police Department filed against the city and New York Police Department claiming he had been threatened with violence and called vulgar names and treated unfairly by supervisors because of his sexuality after he came out in 2003. He had a co-worker tell him that all faggots should be shot.
What?
Oh, my.
Yes. He's also had... they've been giving him rookie tasks. He's been there for 5 years, and they're making him do stuff like, you know, walk a beat and, you know, other little demeaning things.
Well, they should make that department watch that new Adam Sandler movie.
Chuck and Larry.
I wonder if that partner's name was Louis Welch.
Oh, is he still alive?
Barely.
And for those of you listeners who don't know who Louis Welch is, former mayor who once said, shoot the fags.
Well, he basically lost the... He was looking very good at being, in terms of being reelected mayor, and the cameras were still rolling when he said, off camera, shoot the fags, which effectively lost the campaign with him, which speaks fairly well for at least in that the Houston people aren't completely insane.
What year was that?
Yes, but it gave rise to t-shirts, don't shoot Louis.
Or, oh, Louis, you missed. Oh, here we go, in the BDSM strain there. Men to receive public lashing for sodomy in Saudi Arabia. Sharia law carried out in Saudi Arabia as two men received the first set of 7,000 lashings for
sodomy. I don't think
sodomy.
They had a safe word.
And I don't think it was consensual.
I don't either.
The men who were not identified were meted out with an unspecified number of lashes in public in the southwestern city of Al Baha on Tuesday evening. They were then returned to prison where they were held until the full punishment is completed. The newspaper added, without saying how many sessions this would involve.
Ooh, how many lashes?
Yes, 7,000 lashes.
That's a lot.
But Chris, you have to remember, in Iran, they do not have homosexuality.
However, in Iran, because the religious leaders didn't find anything in the Quran about transsexuals, I was watching this on current TV. It's okay to be transsexual in Iran because the Quran says nothing about it, okay? But you can't be a homosexual in Iran because the Quran condemns it.
Interesting.
Yes, but the Quran says it has to be witnessed by 4 other males.
The Quran,
so I wonder, the Quran, what are these guys doing?
Going to the Turkish baths, probably.
What are these 4 other guys doing while 2 guys are having fun?
One's holding the camera and the other 2 are mounting the lights. George Takei now has a celestial body named after him.
Who does?
George Takei.
Takei Sulu from... Takei. It's Takei, not Takei.
Takei rhymes with gay.
For a reason.
Or as he said in the roast of William Shatner, Takei rhymes with toupee. An asteroid located between Mars and Jupiter... Strange, I would have thought it would have been closer to Uranus. Has been named for Star Trek's Takei Sulu, actor George Takei. The actor learned of the news yesterday. He says, "Now I'm a heavenly body. I just found out about it yesterday. I was blown away. It came out of the clear blue sky just like an asteroid." The celestial body will now be called 7307 Takei, approved by the International Astronomical Union's Committee on Small Body Nomenclature.
God. They have a committee for this?
Yeah.
Sure. Good Lord.
There's lots of heavenly bodies to name out there.
Actually, I thought the George W. Bush one would have been closer to Uranus, but anyway.
no, only the head end. He was named this out of appreciation for his work with the Japanese American Citizens League and the gay rights group HRC. On that, so now he's he comes out and has a rock named after him.
Yay!
Wow.
Let's see. So he is a heavenly body, but he doesn't have one. Anyway, go on.
Russian Orthodox leader. We haven't heard from a Russian Orthodox. Oh, and in that outfit, he's straight. Patriarch Alexei II, head of the Russian Orthodox Church, offered his opinion of gay pride to the Council of Europe. Where he was speaking on Tuesday, the Council of Europe has 47 member countries and seeks to develop throughout the Europe common and democratic principles based on the European Convention of Human Rights and other reference texts. He said, when persistent attempts were made to hold a homosexual parade in Moscow, we believe that it meant propaganda and advertisement of sin. Alexei told the session of Council of European Peace in France. Attempts are made to justify homosexuality by calling it a disease, the patriarch said. Yet kleptomania can also be considered a disease, he argued. Why then does no one advertises kleptomania while homosexuality gets advertised on a gay parade?
So somebody can say the same tired old stuff that has been said how many times
because
or how many centuries?
Steal everything in sight, but
is anybody actually listening to him much anyway?
The Russian Orthodox.
You know, I'd rather listen to Slava Mogutin or whatever the Russian porn star who writes really great poetry and has this art blog and he's an incredible artist and he got kicked out of Russia for getting married or trying to get married.
I think we should help him out, and we need to start a kleptomania's pride parade.
Distribute,
you know.
Actually, we need to ask him if it would be homosexuality if we started, like, blowing altar boys under the age of 12. Then does it count?
Well, he's Russian Orthodox, you know.
He's not Roman Catholic.
Oh, that's true.
not Roman Catholic. He's Russian Orthodox, so he's got the beard and the funny hat, but, you know.
And the long black dress.
Well, you know, back in Nureyev's day, there were no homosexuals in Russia.
That's why Nureyev.
That was the policy.
Yeah.
That was the way they put it. So mm-hmm. you know, at least now there are homosexuals in Russia that they can complain about.
Yeah.
Progress.
Ted Haggard's escort, Mike Jones, claims that Larry Craig was one of his clients.
Oh, of course. Andy Warhol, call your 15 minutes are up.
I hope he charged a lot. Make it worth it.
I like the fact they're spending $25,000 to make the bathroom stall walls in that bathroom at the Minneapolis airport. Instead of having a foot of space underneath it, it's now going to be 2 to 3 inches.
I heard that it's actually become a tourist attraction.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. First he says he did it, then he says he didn't do it, then he says he's going to resign, then he says he's not going to resign. I mean, can't this senator
he's a flaky queen.
He would have to be straight with us.
Well, he's a flaky queen. What do you expect out of him? Come on now.
Yet one more Republican gets a blowjob and self-destructs.
Yeah, well, but see, I think he'd had many. I don't think it was.
It wasn't a blowjob.
It was the fact that he didn't get it that he self-destructed.
Oh, yes. Right.
When he had them successfully, he didn't succeed.
When I saw the picture of the cop, I understood completely why the senator wouldn't mind, you know, blowing the guy.
In fact, there's a whole thing about him and his history of entrapment, and that's sort of like what he does.
It is.
No, that's one of his main functions in the police force in Minneapolis is to entrap gay people.
I think that there has to be something mentally or emotionally wrong with somebody who dedicates their lives to things like this.
Yeah.
And?
Yep.
They're called vice cops.
Oh, wait.
They're trained to do this.
That one didn't lock.
What you got, Chris?
Well, they had a headline here about a New Orleans Republican caught toe-tapping in the mall, but the link didn't work.
Aww.
Oh. What was that one about?
My mom asked me if that really happened? And I said, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's sometimes
the only thing. I have had friends say, do gay people really have sex in bathrooms? I said, oh, God, I've had some of the greatest sex I've ever had. And, I mean, I had so much great sex in bathrooms. I've really gotten to do a lot of, like, really, you know, enlightening straight people about how much fun you can have in the bathroom.
Well, I've got to tell you this. Me and my partner took a straight friend to a gay bar one night. And after we left, she looked at him and said, well, were you nervous at all? And he said, oh, no, I figured if anything happened, I could just run to the bathroom.
That's right. But yeah, I mean, this whole—I mean, I love turning the whole shame of having a bathroom on its head into the sort of glorious celebration of life that it has and can be. You know, cause, I mean, this whole thing of like, ooh, shameful having sex in bathrooms. Ooh, poor gay people have to have sex in bathrooms. I'm sorry, there's been a lot of fun had there.
I'm not going to do the shame thing about bathroom sex. But David, you know, you're a pretty well versed guy, and you know as well as I do that this country has a crazy hang up about sex.
Well, I know.
As compared to the rest of the world.
But I mean, on one hand, I've had sex in bathrooms. On the other hand, I've sat at the Gay Pride March in '93 making out with my boyfriend looking at the White House over his shoulder. So. I've covered the politically correct aspect of it.
My theory is that bathroom sex was started by bored husbands who got tired of waiting for their wives while they were shopping.
Oh, well, glory holes in general.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, and our final little story. We haven't heard much news from The View lately.
Oh boy. Rosie's not there, so.
Close the advertiser. There we go.
Not a bad
Whoopi Goldberg, yes, who took over Rosie's position. Sure, politicians always receive a warm welcome when they appear on daytime talk shows, but welcome House Speaker Nancy Pelosi got on the View was more than warm. Even before Pelosi walked on stage to take her seat with the roundtable, the show's moderator, Whoopi Goldberg, and how it goes, you want to look at Nancy Pelosi's handsome husband, Walters asked the audience. Yes, came the answer from the form of whooping and hollering. The poor guy was actually blushing. But then the show's host asked him how long he and the Madam Speaker had been married. 44 years, he said.
Oh, my God.
That's a record for anybody in Congress.
Her daughter makes political documentaries that are actually very good.
I'm trying to find the actual quote on here where she, Whoopi Goldberg, offered to do a three-way with Nancy Pelosi and her husband.
Talk about polyamory.
I wouldn't pay for that video clip, but
an Oreo cookie. But anyway,
reverse
Oreo cookie.
Exactly. Yeah.
Pay for that video.
No. On that note, we are coming very close here to the end of the show.
Messerschmitt's here,
so I have to go in.
Yay!
Don't mention that. Our online person there was putting his 2 cents in worth about the bathroom talk and says, remember Kroger's.
And everybody looks at Neil, but
he said it was empty.
Because you walk in
Mr. Meat Man.
Yes, I get paid to stuff sausages and wieners in tight spaces all day, okay?
Ooh.
Nothing wrong with that.
All right, it's time for me to head on out, for us to head out of here, and I've got to clean the memory out of this computer so they don't see the pictures and the website.
Hey, I thought they could find them no matter if you did arrest them or not.
They haven't called me yet. Then again, I'm just confess to it. You've been listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude, and listeners sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org.
Mm-hmm.
You know how to get a hold of us if you want to. If not,
how you doing?
Now, 419 Lovett, Houston, Texas, 77006.
The Quiet Loner is here.
And, yeah, what the heck? What's, I'm going to push. It's time now.
Is it PSA time?
It's PSA time. Okay. I actually played both of them this week.
Yay! Wow, we'll see you next week.
Starting October 22nd, KPFT will kick off its fall pledge drive, and we need your help to make it a success. So please, put your spare time to use by volunteering. Our phone volunteer trainings are Wednesday, October 10th at 6 p.m., and again on Sunday, October 14th at 11 a.m. Sessions will be here at the KPFT Studios, 419 Lovett Boulevard. You'll meet KPFT listeners just like you and help this community radio station. Your efforts make a difference and can make this a fun, fast, and successful drive. Again, those phone volunteer training dates are Wednesday, October 10th at 6 p.m. and Sunday, October 14th at 11 a.m. They'll be here at the studios of KPFT 419 Lovett Boulevard in Montrose. If you've already trained as a phone volunteer, just call 713-526-4000 to sign up for a shift. KPFT Houston.
The Athena Art Project and KPFT proudly present the 13th Annual Houston Women's Festival, Saturday, October 20th at Jones Plaza. It's a full day of nonstop music. Ruthie Foster leads a powerful lineup that includes Kelly Gray and Susan Gibson. She needs wide open spaces. One of Houston's favorite performers, Ginger Lee, emcees the big event. For more information, call 713-995-5251 or visit hwfestival.org. The Houston Women's Festival is October 20th. Volunteer for the Houston Women's Festival. The only requirement is your enthusiasm. The festival takes place again Saturday, October 20th. Volunteer today and reserve your place in the spotlight. Call 713-995-5251 or visit hwfestival.org. This is KPFT Houston.
It's a small, quiet room. A revolver and some time in my...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.